to the end.
Welcome to episode 66 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
It's a big show today and we've got a lot to discuss. So what's coming up on this episode? Mark, what's our main review?
Our main review is Logan.
It is.
It's finally here. After all that wait, we're now going to do it. The latest X-Men film, Logan.
And theoretically the final X-Men film
for
Hugh Jackman.
You never know. You never know.
Depends how much money they throw at him, isn't it? If they just back up a big truck full of cash to his front door.
Making it rain.
Indeed. Gemma, what is our rewatch?
We're going to be rewatching Monty Python's classic, The Life of Brian.
Giving the game away a little bit, but it's one of my favourite films of all time.
Spoilers.
So there's a little spoiler for you. The topic of conversation this time round are our top three remakes or reboots. It's a topic we've kind of touched on in the past in the Odd Listener Question, but we've never given it the full topic treatment, so we're going to be doing that this time round. Mark, who are we mass debating over?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes!
Another one that I've been waiting to masturbate over for months.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready. He's, if you guys are ready for this one.
Oh, big time. He's one of our favourites here at Skip to the End. Gemma, what's the game show we're playing today?
We're going to be playing the final round of List and Shout. It's me versus him over there, Ben.
It is indeed. And I've just got this horrible feeling that Mark's going to F us both over royally. He's going to have done something atrocious to us.
Did I not warn you on the last episode? Did I not say that I was going to get revenge?
You did. You did,
but
to be fair.
Revenge on who?
Both of you.
What?
Because I can't be the champion now, and I gave it all the biggin' for the last few weeks, and now I've got to accept that one of you are going to take the trophy home tonight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Stick around for that, guys. Please, it's going to be a
Clash of the Titans. There's plenty more to come up on the show as well. We'll be giving away a whole heap of prizes as we normally do. Before we get into the meat of the show, though, there's a lot to discuss in the intro. I think it's fair to say that the last couple of weeks have been very eventful in both the movie world and the Skip to the End podcast world. So let's start with the movie world. Between this episode and the last one, we've had the Oscars ceremony. And those of you who listened to the previous episode will know that we did our Oscar predictions. Gemma, Mark and I all named our predictions in the top eight categories, and then we had to see who would win. And the winner was me. I won.
Have you got an acceptance you want to give or anything?
No, it's just standard, isn't it? Ben wins.
Hang on.
Yeah, what?
I'm just looking at this here.
What?
No, me and Gemma have won, not you.
Oh,
sorry,
Is it a bloody rogue accountant again? Has got it wrong.
This is awkward.
I've got the piece of paper here. It said,
"Oh God, it's in black and white."
Look, Mark and Gemma.
Mark and Gemma.
I blame Warren Beatty personally. So in fact, Gemma and Mark won. I think the only one you got wrong was Best Picture. You both went for La La Land.
We did.
Then I also went for La La Land, and I let my heart rule my head by picking Denzel Washington for Best Actor, and Casey Affleck won to apathy in the room. Denzel Washington's face looked like someone had just shot his children.
Massively.
And Brie Larson, who handed the award to him, steadfastly refused to clap for him.
She might as well just hand it to his face.
Just throw it at him from a meter.
So I'm champion of something on this episode.
Co-champion.
All right.
Hello.
It's still
the
champion.
Still the
remit. Yeah, it's what it'll do.
What do we think about what happened at the Oscars, though? Ooh. I mean, it's a clusterfuck of epic proportions, isn't it?
Wow. There's just one story saying that, Warren Beatty was handed the wrong card, but now Emma Stone is saying, no, I had the card as a souvenir all the time. It's crazy. Like, this is what you see in a film. You don't see this in real life.
It was like Naked Gun.
It was.
Sitting there watching it, thinking this is not reality. And I was sat there at 4 a.m. texting Ben, and we were like, oh my God, La La Land's won. And, you know, the tweets went out and we're sitting there. And then suddenly, what the hell? It's on that scale of that award ceremony that happens once a year with so many professionals and so many people behind it, one of the most watched TV shows.
Yeah.
How do you balls up on that scale? How?
And the way it happened is because the PricewaterhouseCoopers accountant who was supposed to hand out the correct envelope was too busy taking photos of Emma Stone to put on his Instagram account rather than paying attention to which envelope he pulled out, because they have dual envelopes on each side of the stage. So that if something goes wrong, they have duplicates. So he had the Emma Stone one still in there because the Emma Stone one that was used came from the other side of the stage. So he just pulled the wrong one out because he wasn't paying attention. That's what happened.
Oh,
what a mug.
Oops.
So there he is, wanting to kind of show off, get him with Emma Stone, probably wants to try and shaft Emma Stone. And he ended up shafting Emma Stone anyway with the bloody wrong envelope.
Yeah.
Idiot.
Fool.
Sack him.
Yeah. Moving swiftly on. Gemma, you went to Secret Cinema.
I did.
How was it?
Wow. They raised their game up every single event. This was astounding. It was a whole it was almost like a little town of Montmartre. They had an absinthe bar in the corner. They had a cafe with loads of singing and dancing going on. There was a big red top, like a circus, with loads of burlesque performances and acrobatics.
Because this was Moulin Rouge, yeah?
It was Moulin Rouge. I should have said that at the start, but use your imaginations, people. I did.
And it is a secret, remember?
It is. Oh, tell no one. Whoops, I've kind of told 80,000 people.
It's not like Fight Club, where you're not allowed to talk about it after you've been.
And at the end, Robert Paulson comes on stage. It's brilliant. Absolutely mind-blowing. There was characters all across the whole place singing songs from the film and acting out some scenes as well. When you actually went into the main part, it was set up as a theatre. They had can-can dancers, they had Harold Zidler, and just an incredible, incredible event. And I'm so, so grateful that Secret Cinema are doing these events out there. People are going to see them and attend them as well. And it just makes me very excited as to see what the next one's going to be.
And that's the big question, isn't it?
Where do you go from Moulin Rouge?
I'm not even going to say. Don't look at me.
Tell me.
Mac and me. Set in a supermarket with aliens walking around, and you have to try and get Skittles and Coca-Cola without being, you know, bitten.
Do you get
is that like a Dawn of the Dead with Mac and me?
Do you get to pick your own characters? Because I want to be the teddy bear who dances on the counter in McDonald's.
We know they're going to come out with something amazing. I still think they should do Jaws, get a beach and just do that, something like that. But
I'm thinking Mad Max.
Oh, yeah, that
think
would work.
Of the possibilities.
But Gemma's not the only person who got to go to a fantastic event in the last couple of weeks. We all did, all three of us. Mark, tell them about it. Where have we been?
We went to the European premiere of the brand new Kong film, Kong Skull Island.
Mm-hmm.
I can see Gemma sitting here now, still not really thinking
it was
real.
I'm pinching myself here. I'm like, what?
The whole red carpet treatment. We got to go to London thanks to Warner Brothers. They sent us along. Amazing. What an experience. Getting to meet all the cast. You know, it's just Samuel L. Jackson, Brie Larson. Who else did we meet? I can't remember who's there.
John C. Reilly, Toby Kebbell. Mm.
Oh, and that other guy, you know.
Oh, Tom Hiddleston.
Just Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah, that little fella there.
Hiddleston.
Just great. Just a whole amazing experience. Seeing all the interviews, seeing the whole, all the press there. It felt like we were actually important for a day, didn't it? Let's be honest.
Well, we literally did walk the red carpet. We weren't sort of ushered into a back door. No. We walked the same red carpet that Samuel L. Jackson and Brie Larson walked. Extraordinary.
The one thing I had a bit of a gripe with is, you know when Brie Larson came out of the car and everyone was taking photos going crazy?
Mm-hmm.
No one did that when us three walked along.
Shocking.
And I think it's because they must have thought, that can't be skipped in. Yeah. It can't be. They're not from London.
Imagine how embarrassed they would feel if they said it's the
wrong people.
Now
they're listening back as well, thinking, oh my God, we could have got a photo of them. Oh well.
More fool them. And we got to see the film as well. Honest thoughts on the film, guys? What do you think?
Meh.
A really good experience to go to the cinema. The largest screen you can find. CGI, unbelievable. Like, literally, this is crazy scale of whole blockbusters, IMAX, explosions. Mm-hmm. Film itself, I didn't really care for, if I'm totally honest. Not a great film, but just the experience didn't matter for us to be there together and have this.
Yeah, it was a fantastic day out. And as Mark said, thanks a lot to Warners for it. I didn't enjoy the film. I thought Brie Larson was entirely wasted. I think she had four lines in the whole film. It didn't really work for me, but great fun anyway. Keep inviting us, please.
Yes, definitely. Any other big news happened this week, Ben?
Well, there was one other thing, wasn't there, Mark? And I'm going to let you tell us about it as well.
So I'll kind of give you a bit of a backstory of how this came about. So there I am. I promised my wife on her birthday I would not check my phone for a day because I'm an absolute nightmare. These guys know what I'm like with my phone. Ridiculous. I'm there. We're going shopping. I think we're in Oxford shopping, walking around the street. And my phone, zzz, I thought, okay, zzz, what? Zzz, 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 like this. Literally, like I thought someone's trying to ring me. Pulled it out. 191 notifications on Twitter within a minute. And I thought, this is not right.
Yeah.
So I went on and Film 4 had put up a voting system, like, tell us your favourite podcast right now, movie podcasts. And every single person I know and have ever seen on our Twitter feed had gone and said, skip to the end, skip to the end, skip to the end. People I'd never ever seen before, skip to the end. It got to the point where there was that many people saying skip to the end. When someone cropped up and said something like Empire, Film 4 actually said, at last, someone different.
Yeah.
We got the most votes over any other podcast in the whole of the country, which is insane.
It's extraordinary.
My wife is not happy because I was then checking my phone for hours. But
It was a phenomenal response. And then Film 4 put out a tweet to say, here are the most popular ones. And there were four. There was ours. I believe it was Empire podcast, the Mark Kermode podcast, and How Did This Get Made, which is a big American podcast.
Yeah.
To be held in the same kind of esteem as those three major podcasts was phenomenal for our little ragtag operation over here.
We're incredibly grateful, though. Yeah. Like, so, so grateful. And it's nice.
And the best thing is, since then, we've had loads of new listeners. I've seen loads of new tweets. Yeah. People that I've never, ever seen on our Twitter popping up saying, amazing, can't wait for the new episode. So I just want to say welcome if this is your first ever time for listening. Yeah. And please stick around.
Please stick around. Mm. And that last episode, the Moonlight episode, is now on track to be our most popular regular episode ever.
In history.
It's on track. It's not broken that yet, but after 1 week of being out, it's very close.
It would take something stupid now. Yeah. Everyone in the world would just have to not have internet if we didn't beat it. So we will be celebrating.
Yeah.
But I think because of all, you know, the week we've had, the red carpet, the film for, we should have a brother's cider and celebrate.
Let's.
So we've got strawberry and kiwi, toffee apple. What have you got, Ben? Summer fruits?
Yep.
Let's do this.
Cheers, well done, chaps. What a story.
Let's get started. Topic of conversation this time round is top three remakes or reboots. As I said in the intro, we've kind of touched on this in the past, but not fully. And the reason why I wanted to do it as a topic is because sometimes we speak derisively about remakes and reboots. We kind of write them off and say they're always unnecessary, they're always bad. And I wanted to look into it with more detail and decide whether that was true or not, whether there are genuinely great remakes. And based on the list I've put together, I'm pretty damn sure there is, and I think you guys are going to prove that also. So I'm going to throw it out to you first of all, Gemma. What's your first pick?
My first pick is a horror classic that was made into an even bigger horror classic, Dawn of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it too.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So we had the original made in 1978 by the one and only George A. Romero. And then we had the Zack Snyder treatment in 2004. And my God, what a remake this was. Both the films involve a ragtag bunch of mismatched people that find refuge in a shopping mall to escape the clutches of the undead that's roaming the earth now. But what I love about this remake is it's sort of a polar opposite to what the original was. So we still had the same storyline. We still had people running away into like this great big shopping place. However, rather than these slow, bumbling, moving kind of creatures of the undead, we were given the modern day retelling of this kind of monster. The zombies were frenzied. They were fast. They were maniacal. So much rage within them. And I found that to be completely refreshing. I think it was one of the first films in the zombie genre that actually did this kind of take. I think after the success of maybe 28 Days Later, it was given the Romero treatment, and the treatment was absolutely wonderful.
I'm curious as to what Romero's response to that was, because I know he's not a big fan of the sort of running zombies, is he?
I looked into this.
Yeah.
He was happy with it. Okay. He was happy with how it all pans out in the end as well. But the great thing about this film as well, being the original film, it almost has that comedic element to it as well. We have the gonk, which it appears at the very end of Shaun of the Dead. So some of the music's a little bit more of a clown kind of melody. And you also have stuff like The Goblins, which was responsible for the score in Suspiria, which is another great horror film. Whereas the modern one, it took music such as Johnny Cash. It had Disturbed, I think, as well in it. So it had a real sort of angry feel to it rather than the quote-unquote comedic feel from the original film as well. I found the ending of the new film much more ambiguous than it was with the original. The original was a little bit more safe. Everybody got out alive. Hooray, the helicopter came. They went off and lived their life elsewhere. The ending to the remake was so much more downbeat. Basically, nobody lived, let's face it. With that found footage bit at the end when they're trying to escape to the island on the boat, nobody lives. It connects so well that it almost feels like two separate films. The Zack Snyder treatment for the new film with the endorsement of George A. Romero. Brilliant.
I can't really add much more to that amazing summary.
You've left him nothing to work with.
Sorry.
Do you know who did the adapted screenplay for this film?
I don't. Please tell me.
James Gunn.
What? Wow. The
yes. F? Yes. James Gunn was involved in that. So that's why you know it works so well. I actually give Zack Snyder quite a lot of grief. And it's probably because of the new Batman films. I'm not a massive fan. Sometimes he gets a lot of stick.
Mm-hmm.
His directing is fantastic, and I have to give him credit where it's due. And the opening sequence to this film is one of the greatest openings. And I think we did this as a topic, opening. And I should have chose this now. Just incredible. We're seeing this couple getting together on the couch, watching telly as normal. Things are going okay. The way they make this zombie attack and the blood on the neck, the gore, the editing is where it really kicks you so hard in the face in the opening 10 minutes, you need to take a breather.
You do. Yeah.
Then we get this whole shot of her driving off, and the camera as a
like a bird's eye view
yeah. is some of the. It's just, it's been used so many times, but for some reason it feels like the first time you see it in this film done so well. We get the camera stuck to the very back of the car with the zombies running off, running at the car itself. And it just gives you this vision of, it makes me feel terrified. It makes me think that's what it'll be like if I'm driving away right now in my little Ford Fiesta away from these horrendously evil zombies. And it really made me picture what it would be like. Yeah. And I don't think there's many other directors that can make me feel like that.
And it's interesting, I haven't seen either of these films, I must admit, either the original or the remake. But it is interesting when you refer to Snyder there, because he has a lot of critics, we know this. And this is the film that people often refer to. When people say, oh, Zack Snyder's a shit director, he doesn't know what he's doing. People say, no, check out his Dawn of the Dead remake, because this proves that he is a great director. I think that's also true of Watchmen, I think the evidence is there. But this is the one people use as that signpost. No, he can do the job. Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant. It really is a great film. And I'm so glad that you agree with me as well. Yes!
Already a duplicate choice.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's not bad, is it?
Come on, Ben, it's your topic.
I'm going to go the complete opposite way with this. So you've started with a horror. I'm going to start with kind of a screwball comedy. My pick is Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Ooh.
Nice!
So Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, for those who don't know, is a comedy from 1988 about two con men, the suave Brit Michael Caine and the brash American Steve Martin, as they compete to con a rich heiress out of 50 grand. It's a hilarious, brilliant comedy with two of the best actors, one of the best comedic actors of all time in Martin, just one of the best actors of all time in Caine. The funny thing is, when I was researching this topic, I was kind of looking online what people's suggestions were for the best remakes and reboots, and this one came up. I had no idea that this was a remake.
I didn't either.
I had no clue until the other day. And it's a film I absolutely love. It's arguably one of the best comedies of the 80s, and I think it's a fairly forgotten film. I think when people are making their lists of best comedies, they miss this off, and they shouldn't. But apparently, it is a remake of a film from 1964 called Bedtime Stories, which starred in the lead roles Marlon Brando and David Niven. And I didn't know this film. I didn't know this film existed, let alone that this was now a remake of it, which is absolutely fantastic. The chemistry between the two leads in this film is wonderful. They bounce off each other so well, which is why it was all the more surprising to me when I read that the original cast, that this film was made to be a vehicle for David Bowie and Mick Jagger.
I would have watched that. Take my money.
Think of that.
I'm just sitting here now going, unfortunately he's gone now, but I would have paid everything to see that.
Yeah.
Oh my lord.
Wouldn't have been quite the same film, I don't think.
Unless they have a little, like, you know, the interlude of them doing Dancing on the Street for their music video.
They'd have to have that in
I would have made it rain on them.
The grand irony of all of this, of course, is despite this being a remake, it is then being remade again. It's now in the pipeline in Hollywood to be remade, and it's going to be gender flipped, which I'm all for. That's great. The problem is the two actresses they've chosen.
I know who you're going to say.
Christ. Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson.
It's like they're personally attacking Ben in the best way they can.
It's as if they're trying to destroy my childhood or something, because they are two of my least favourite actresses of all time. Not just currently working, of all time.
They're not really funny either, are they?
They're atrociously unfunny, both of them.
Yes. I really want to start a YouTube channel because you can see Ben's anger in his face right now.
I need to move to the other
side. He's going
to
Hulk out.
Throw a chair.
Do the punch across like an Avengers to you, Gemma. You couldn't actually pick two. That's it.
No.
James Corden could be in it as well. Put him in there.
James Corden. Yeah. James Franco.
Adam Sandler.
Put them all in.
Put them all in. It'd be a classic. I'm getting angry. Let's move on.
My second choice, I'm going to go to the 70s with Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Mm. Wow.
Mm. The original was made in 1956, and the original was seen as a social comment about McCarthyism and the communist witch hunts that were going on at the time with the American government. The remake was made in 1978. I would probably say it's more of a reboot, actually, because it's not a direct remake.
Okay.
The story's still there. The characters changed. There's a few changes here and there, but the long and short of it is the film is about a community of people that seem to be changing in their personalities. They seem to be very complacent, very emotionless. And it's up to a small number of people to find out exactly what's happening to their community. Why are these people acting so cold and lifeless? And it's that creeping, impending doom as to what is actually happening. And the thing that you might think is the reason why they're being like this, you would never imagine it would be this. So what I love about this film is it does have very clear influences in a lot of films today. So probably one of the more noticeable ones is The World's End. Huge influence from that, even down to the way how these people spot a human that hasn't had this treatment of them being emotionless. They point out and scream, terrifyingly. The remake of this has the element of a B-movie, which we saw in the original. So there's a lot of Dutch angles, but used in the right way, not Battlefield Earth way. Nah. Just want to point that out.
Sorry, I've just had a flashback to when we talked about Battlefield Earth and Mark calling them Dutch angels rather than Dutch angels.
Dutch angels!
And then I saw a picture. There's a basketball team called the Dutch Angels that someone had posted. Amazing.
I've just got an image of Rude Hullet with like some angel wings and a halo. So they have them. But it's used to an effect where it amps up the creepiness throughout the film as well. And you start questioning exactly what's happening and who's going to be next in this whole lifeless being of a person. There's even one point when you actually see these pods. So what they do is these pods, they're alien life form, and they start duplicating these people into these lifeless beings. Mm-hmm. The creepiest bit about this film is when you actually see this happening, the sound that emits from these pods sounds like a heartbeat of a baby from an ultra scan. So what's supposed to be one of the most amazing, pleasant sounds of a parent's life actually is the most terrifying thing you will ever hear in a 1970s horror film. It's horrific.
That's very smart.
But Donald Sutherland is a majestic vision of coolness in this film. You've got the likes of Jeff Goldblum. It's a great film. And I love the fact we're doing this topic because I don't think we've ever spoken about a film like this before as well.
No. Again.
Done.
Again, because it's kind of a horror. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So, Mark, have you seen this one?
I've only seen the remake. I've not seen the original. Mm. I've got the... it sounds ridiculous. I bought this because it had a beautiful steelbook. It's this sort of white with this orangey spray paint effect where you see the figures in the background. And it was that whole thing like a poster. It just drawn me. I thought, I'm going to buy this. I've heard a lot about it. But the cover got me.
Yeah, it's a Dutch angle cover. Or Dutch angel, sorry.
Mm. Very nice. And I fell in love with it straight away. And it's funny that your first pick is Dawn of the Dead, which we've seen now Shaun of the Dead. Mm-hmm. You've now just got The World's End coming from this. Yep. So, you know, I wonder what your third pick's going to be. Is it going to be like a police cop sort of?
Police Academy 6.
Yeah, great film. And it's nice to hear us talk about some horror. I know, Ben, it's not your genre, but it's not often we get this excuse to just talk about good horror films.
We've done it now, haven't we?
I'll get my coat then, shall I?
Yes. Come back in about 15 minutes, mate, for the main review.
Go on then, Mark. What's your next pick?
Well, this is quite a big one, and I'm hoping you guys have both seen it. If you haven't, I'd be very surprised. Mm. True Lies.
Great film.
Oh, I love this.
Absolutely great film. Yeah. Mm-hmm. James Cameron has made some great action films in his time. You know, we love Alien. Titanic isn't so much an action film, but we've got Terminator. We've got this film. But what they don't have that this film has is the humour element, which we always kind of lack in a good action film. This has everything you want. The very stereotypical bad guy, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the man himself. Is he the god of action films for them?
Oh, he was in those days.
Not now.
King of the 90s, but not so much now.
The late Bill Paxton, it pains me to say, which is sad. Mm. And Tom Arnold, but Jamie Lee Curtis.
She has a smoking body about her in this film.
The first thing I think of when I think of this film is the striptease scene.
Oh, with the rose?
Yeah.
But the thing is, she's not just gorgeous, she's actually very funny in this film as well, which is just amazing. I just love the element of humour in this film, and some people out there might be going, I didn't know this was a remake.
I didn't, until I saw it again when I was doing my research.
The famous 1991 film, Le Total.
I need to hear Mark do his French accent again. Please say it again.
Le Total. The best way to describe this film is it is an American James Bond movie. That's all you need to know in my eyes. It's got the elements, it's got the humour, it's got the suaveness. But Arnold Schwarzenegger back then, like you said, not now, when he was doing The Commando, he was doing all these great action films, Predator, this one had the humour that just tickled me. And I actually watched it again this week and just laughed my ass off for a good 2 hours. And I think James Cameron should now... I know he's doing Avatar 7 this week or whatever he's doing at the moment. But I wish he had more humour in his films again because he knows how to do it right. And let's be honest, when you get Michael Bay trying to do it in Bad Boys, it works. But then he doesn't quite get it right in sort of Transformers. I think he nails it in this.
Yeah, I agree entirely. Very good film. And one I haven't seen in a good long while.
I need to get this into my life again. I really do.
Me too.
Come on then, Ben.
Well, I'm going to go for 12 Monkeys.
That's a great film.
I didn't even know it was a remake.
Oh my God, neither did I.
So 12 Monkeys, the 1995 film directed by Terry Gilliam, starring Brad Pitt and Bruce Willis. It's a story of a guy played by Willis who is in a dystopian future and he gets sent back to the past to track down a virus that has been released around that time in the 90s that then destroyed civilization. But he ends up in a sort of mental institution and people don't know whether he's telling the truth or whether he's just out of his mind. Obviously, they assume he's out of his mind. They don't think time travel is real. But yes, it was a remake. It was based on a French short film from 1962 called La Jetée, which tells the same story in a 28-minute French short film that is primarily made up of black and white still photographs. And it tells the story through the photographs and a little bit of dialogue. And it's essentially the same tale. It's really, really boring. I didn't get through the whole 28 minutes.
I like the honesty, though.
So I like that Gilliam and his team of writers, who included David Webb Peoples, who co-wrote Blade Runner, I like that they took this kernel of an idea from a really obscure French art film and then created this magnificent beast from it. I absolutely love 12 Monkeys, and I love the story because I like kind of weird, crazy sci-fi, but it's all about the acting to me. Bruce Willis is at his sort of wildest and his best and strongest, but then you've got Brad Pitt, who is just batshit crazy in this. I think this is the film that, for me, said, this is a guy to watch. This guy's the real deal, Brad Pitt. Mm-hmm. He is just unbelievably great in this film.
He's almost unrecognisable.
Yeah.
So, like, wired and so, like, frantic.
I think I should now do my confession.
Oh, no, don't.
I've not seen it.
You've never seen 12 Monkeys? Holy moly.
It's that one of those ones that you know, you just think, oh, I'll watch that at some point.
It passes on by, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is why we do the podcast. Exactly. It's about learning and seeing new films, and I will take this one away. And I've read so many people say that Bruce Willis gave everything in this performance. Yeah. And, you know,
it's cracking.
He doesn't anymore.
Mm. Yes, you know, he phones it in. We know.
You know, let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah. But this is one of his best performances. Pitt's even better. Pitt was actually nominated for an Oscar, Best Supporting Actor. Mm. He didn't win, sadly, but it's an absolutely wild performance. And the direction has to take a lot of credit for this film. Terry Gilliam is so good at making these really bizarre, off-kilter, offbeat films. Mm-hmm. You've only got to watch things like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and Brazil to see
Brazil
his style.
Is so good, yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic, yeah. Isn't it? And his style comes through so strongly in this film. And the message of the film, or the kind of overriding story of the film, is about a guy who is haunted throughout his life because he witnessed something and he keeps having these recurring dreams. And then at the end of the film, we find out what it is that he witnessed. I would happily have said what it is, but because Mark's not seen it, I really don't want to spoil this for you. It's too good.
Do you want me to take my headphones off? Because everyone in the world who's listening will have seen it, and I can just not listen.
Well,
if
everyone in the world has seen it, then they know what I'm talking about. Okay. So I don't need to say it. But for your benefit, I'm not going to say.
Sorry,
but it's a film that absolutely needs to be watched. And this won't make much of a difference to you, Mark, because you haven't seen it. But to you, Gemma, again, speaking of castings that didn't happen, when this film was originally conceived, the main cast that Gilliam wanted was Nick Nolte and Jeff Bridges.
Oh my god, really?
Yeah, which is very different to Brad Pitt and Bruce Willis.
I don't know if that would have worked as well.
You never know. I mean, Nolte's a wild man. Jeff Bridges is one of the greatest actors of all time, and apparently at the time when this film was made in the early 90s, those two just weren't bankable enough anymore. They'd been big stars in the 80s. Nick Nolte's career's never really recovered. Mm-mm. But Jeff Bridges had come back around again, but at the time they wanted Pitt and Willis.
Wow, maybe in an alternative universe, there's like, that's one of the best films of all time,
maybe,
and we
so
just don't know about
maybe
that.
So.
Have you seen the TV show of 12 Monkeys?
I saw, I think, maybe 3 or 4 episodes of the first season, and I enjoyed it, but not enough to kind of stick with it. I thought it was better than I thought it would be, but I didn't stick with it.
Yeah, I didn't watch it either.
Oh, that's a great conversation to start, Gemma. Brilliant.
There you go. I was just trying to be polite.
If you have seen it, let us know on Twitter and Facebook, because none of us are ever going to watch it.
Nah.
Gemma?
My last choice. Okay, it's Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Ooh, nice film. Very good.
Yep.
So this reboot was started in 2011. We've got two films off the back of it now as well. We've got the third one coming up, but the original was in 1968. The original film, I felt, played by Charlton Heston, he was such an asshole. He was such a douchebag. He really was. I had no sympathy for him whatsoever throughout the whole film, because he found out the monkeys were the superior species. He was now inferior. But with the new Rise of the Planet of the Apes, I felt there was much more of a quietness about the whole film. There was this vulnerability, this humbleness that was projected through Caesar, who is wonderfully played by Andy Serkis, who, may I add, is horrifically underrated.
Yeah, he is.
But I found with two of these stories, they switched storylines in a way, but it completely worked. It was 40% of Rise of the Planet of the Apes is all CGI. You think of when all the monkeys are in the primate sanctuary, when we see Caesar growing up in the house and being domesticated. That's 40% of the film. 60% is probably just here and there of humans sort of interacting, and Tom Felton being an absolute dickhead as well, because he's not great either. It was a franchise where we've seen so many franchises come and be rebooted, and they failed miserably, like on their ass. Probably the most recent one is Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
that ain't coming back, let's face
no.
it. But this, I think it took everybody by surprise as well. The CGI was flawless.
Fantastic, yeah.
The acting was incredible. And who'd have thought, with CGI characters interacting in a way where you feel emotion watching this, and you feel nothing when you watch the original. Just astounding.
And it is really down to the graphics, because in the originals, they're in just really bad ape suits, aren't they?
Oh.
That looks like something you'd get from a charity shop or something.
The bit when Charlton Heston's kissing one of the apes at the end.
Oh, God.
And it's just literally like kissing a rubber doll or something. Terrifying. Yeah.
Whereas they look amazing. And I actually prefer the second of the new rebooted series, because the graphics are phenomenal. And in that one, you've not just got Andy Serkis doing the motion capture. You've got Toby Kebbell as well. And his character was amazing. And I think people don't give motion capture actors their due at all.
Judy Greer as well.
Yeah, she's
another great actress.
So sinister and evil. Like the face expressions. Yeah. It really was like you were so... the ultimate heel in that film. You just hated him from the moment you saw him on screen. But, I mean, I'm just excited for the third one.
Yeah.
Knowing that it's only a few months away, I think. It's the war, isn't it? So it should now just be a two-hour film of just pure
It's going to be the cream of the crop. I think this is so exciting to be seeing all of this together. It's going to be great.
I'm not a massive fan of the originals. It's because it's so long ago now. I just associate myself, you know, watching the newer ones, because I remember going to the cinema and seeing it. And it, like you said, Ben, the CGI is flawless. Some of the stuff looks a bit shit now. Even if you look back at 10 years, 15 years ago at Lord of the Rings, Gollum looks a bit crap now. It just, and that's not a bad thing. It's because it just...
Technology moves on.
But when I watched the Apes film a couple of years ago, it still does look pretty good. So, you know, I'm really excited for the next one.
Me too.
Bring on the war.
Mm-hmm.
My final choice... John Carpenter's The Thing.
Of course it was.
Oh,
of course it was.
I'm shocked.
If you have never listened to Skip to the End, nearly 95% of the episodes I get to talk about The Thing. I couldn't quite get it into top sports films, but I get it into most other
so
categories.
Close.
I couldn't leave it off, guys. You know, it'd be nice to not talk about it, but I would look at the website and think, why did I not put The Thing? Based on the original, which is The Thing from Another World, which is a very average film, I'll be honest with you. In that, James Arnell is playing the Thing monster. I much prefer John Carpenter's take. I much prefer the way that he uses practical effects.
Yes.
Let's be honest about it. This film is one of the greatest horrors ever made. It's not just one of my favourite films ever made. It's the best horror. I don't think there's anything as scary as seeing or terrifying the threat of this alien that can disguise itself in the form of an animal or a human in its body. That alone is the storyline that you can just take anywhere you want.
Yeah.
John Carpenter is the master at directing. And I remember when we did this as a rewatch, Ben, and you'd seen it before, but you really got involved in it again and really kind of fell in love with it.
Loved it.
Instead of me sitting here and talking about The Thing in general, what I've tried to do is say why I think it's so much better than the original and why I'm so in love with it in a few kind of points. I think it's the best use of practical effects that I've seen in the history of cinema, for me personally, especially for the time it came out. And that's kudos to Rob Bottins, who did all the practical effects. Mm. Let's be honest about it. When we see that dog being taken over and the red legs all coming out and the strings, that's 1982, guys.
I don't think I've ever seen anything that comes close to that.
No. Because people stopped trying.
Yeah.
As soon as computer work came in, they just stopped trying as hard with proper in-camera effects.
Yeah.
In cinema history again, have you seen paranoia portrayed as well as that?
No.
Not at all.
The paranoia intention in this film is so high.
The cast alone, Kurt Russell, look at the man himself. Is he one of the greatest guys you've ever seen?
Skip to the end's dad.
But it's one of his best performances.
Yeah. Yes,
and he's done a hell of a lot of good performances. This is one of the things that Ben will be kind of cheering for as well. Underrated upon its release, now seen as a classic. It came out the same day as Blade Runner. Blade Runner kind of flopped. Shawshank Redemption flopped. This flopped. Look at it now. The way it turns, and we've now got this cult classic, this absolute masterpiece. And the ending. Let's be honest about it. Most people want a really good closed-off ending. They're wanting that tidy, happy ending. If you're a fan of John Carpenter, you know at this point, he's basically spent his whole career giving you the end that's not resolved.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. People have their own perception on the ending. Is he really left on his own? Is it all in his head? No one really bloody knows. Even he has never come out and said, but they toast to have a whiskey or a jar of beer together and it's left open.
Yeah.
Is there anything better than that?
That's very cool.
You can have your own take on it. And finally, the score.
Oh, the score's incredible.
Oh, my God. Let me try and pronounce this now. Morricone.
Well done.
Thank you. I'm getting better. One of the best scores. When you see a film, you don't often go out and buy a score. You go and buy the soundtrack because it's got some songs you know. The score on this is genius. And we've seen it now being used even on The Hateful Eight. There's some stuff that was unused. But I actually sit and I'll listen to this score from start to finish. And I think it's just absolutely brilliant.
It adds to the paranoia, doesn't it?
Just that intro. Boom, boom.
Yeah.
What's this all about? Helicopter flying over. Boom, boom. What's this dog running through in the snow? The helicopter's shooting at it. Straight away, you're there. Why? You know, the music.
I can see him. He's sitting across from me, so I know Mark's in the room, but I thought that was the fella from Police Academy doing those effects then.
He's going to do a police siren in a bit.
This was always going to get mentioned. Both of you knew. It was never going to be left off, but it's the greatest film. It's not the greatest film ever, that's Jaws, but it's the greatest horror. It's just, it is a masterpiece.
It is indeed.
And I'm allowed to use it this time.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you love it as much as me?
There's no way I can ever beat your love of The Thing. I do love it, but like your love eclipses it.
I don't think John Carpenter loves it as much as you do.
It is his favourite film he's ever done, though, and he's most proud of.
As well he should be.
Bloody good. Mm. So let's wrap this up then. Ben, it's your topic. Let's hear your final choice.
Boom, The Departed.
Oh my God.
Just yes. Like that again.
Done.
Martin Scorsese's 2006 masterpiece about a Boston cop undercover in the Irish mob and an Irish mobster undercover in the Boston police force. Doesn't get any better than that. It's the film that finally won Scorsese his Oscar, and it is based on the Hong Kong film Infernal Affairs from 2002. The plot lines are essentially the same. There are a couple of key differences. One of the ways that, in my opinion, The Departed improves on it is the mob boss character in The Departed, played by Jack Nicholson. His role is a lot smaller in Infernal Affairs, to the point where he's just kind of there in the background, but he doesn't have as much of an effect on the overall plot, because with The Departed, as well as taking Infernal Affairs, they also rolled in some true life history here. They made the Nicholson character somewhat based on Whitey Bulger, a real-life Boston gangster. And one of the things that Whitey Bulger did in real life is that he became an FBI informant. So they brought that storyline in and attached it to the villain in The Departed, which didn't exist in Infernal Affairs. So that's, for me, one of the reasons why it bumps it up a bit. The endings are different as well. I'm not going to say why. Again, I don't want to spoil this for people who haven't seen Infernal Affairs, but the endings don't pan out quite the same way. I love both films. I would put them probably on a par. I'd say maybe Departed just sneaks it because of those minor changes that I've mentioned. It's all about the acting for me, though. As great as the direction and the screenplay are, I have said it before and I will say it again. This, for me, is Leonardo DiCaprio's best performance. There are points in this where he just is Robert De Niro. There's a scene that I always come back to. It's one of the earlier scenes when he is in the therapist room and he's kind of having this argument with his therapist. And it's this coiled intensity, a man that's either ready to explode or just shatter. And I just couldn't help but think of early De Niro watching him. It's a mind-blowing performance. And something I found out the other day, I've been annoyed that he wasn't nominated for an Oscar, but apparently the studio didn't put him forward for an Oscar for this because he had, it is a starring role, but because there are a lot of characters in this, he kind of considered himself a supporting role. And he didn't want to put himself up against his colleagues. He didn't want to put himself against Matt Damon and against Mark Wahlberg. So he didn't submit for this. I think he submitted for Blood Diamond instead, which he was nominated for. And in the end, Mark Wahlberg was nominated for an Oscar, rightly, because he's amazing as Dignam. But I kind of understand now why he wasn't nominated, because he should have been. He should have been nominated as lead, and he should have won. It's an absolutely magnificent performance from him. As I say, Mark Wahlberg's great. Alec Baldwin's in it as well. He's fantastic. It's just one of those films that I never tire of. No matter how many times I see it, it's like watching it for the first time. It's a fantastic movie.
I completely forgot Alec Baldwin's in it.
Yeah.
The one thing about this film that everyone always talks about is Leonardo DiCaprio, and I really wish more people talked about Mark Wahlberg. Now, Mark Wahlberg is a solidly good actor. Mm-hmm. We see his standard of him in every film that you'd expect from an actor on this level. But for me, I don't believe he's took this performance in this movie to a level that he's never, ever kind of hit again. I think he raised the bar that high that nothing else he's ever done comes close. And I think even he'd admit
Ted
this. Oh, it's a close one. It's a bloody close one there. But I think it must be just being there with Scorsese, being there with Leonardo DiCaprio, I just think you have to up your game. But I just don't know how he's never been able to replicate that again to that standard. It doesn't even feel like Mark Wahlberg. You're watching this character that's Oscar-worthy, and he's going up against Leonardo DiCaprio, that, Ben, you said you didn't like at the start of his career, and now you think he's the greatest actor in the planet.
Exactly, yeah.
Maybe that's what Scorsese does. He brings out this performance out of somebody mm-hmm. that you never thought was actually there, and we see it with Wahlberg.
That's what all the great directors do, bringing out those levels of performance. There was talk for a while of there being a spin-off to this focused on Wahlberg's character, Dignam, and it never happened, and I'm kind of torn. On one hand, I think I'd love to see more mm-hmm. of Dignam and Wahlberg working in that mould. On the other hand, I can't help but feel that it would be diminishing returns. I kind of want it just to stay where it is, and let's not mess with it. Let's not add anything more to it.
Just let it be.
Mm-hmm.
Come on then, let's hear what the good old social media have given us.
Well, TCR Podcast at Tipsy Review said Nolan's Batman.
Brilliant.
Tron.
Amazing.
And... No, what?
What?
Are you agreeing with the remake of Tron?
I liked
it. Good.
Dude, Jeff Bridges.
It's okay, but Jeff Bridges. It was not a good film.
If Jeff Bridges is in it, it could be anything. I will love it.
Mm. Even a crappy CGI Jeff Bridges.
And it'll Godzilla.
Well, it depends which one you mean. If it's the Matthew Broderick one, then you can get Bent. But if it's the newer one with Bryan Cranston, I'll give you that.
Then we had Dan Etchells at Etchells say The Thing.
Brilliant.
The Departed.
Mm-hmm.
And the 2009 treatment of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good one, yeah.
It's a
very
great
good.
Film.
JJ did good.
Mm. Scott Tucker at S77 Tux says Fistful of Dollars,
yes.
True Grit, and Magnificent Seven. So a bit of a Western.
Fistful of Dollars is an interesting one. Sergio Leone film, the first of his Dollars trilogy. Mm. It was an unofficial remake of Yojimbo and Akira Kurosawa film. And by unofficial, I mean he shamelessly ripped it off. And then Kurosawa and the Japanese film studio sued him and said, you've just remade our film without our permission. Cheers. Give us some money.
Then we had Fran at Fran Elizabeth say True Lies, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and Scarface.
Scarface.
That's a fine choice there. Brody's Kitchen at Brody's Kitchen said Cape Fear, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and War of the Worlds. And he's put in brackets, War of the Worlds.
I don't mind that film. It's pretty good. Yeah.
Theme Park Films podcast at Theme Park Films. They're going to be nominated the less credible but still great ones. Ransom, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and Freaky Friday, which I bloody love.
I like that film.
It's a fun film.
I'm liking the love for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I didn't expect anyone to say it.
Yep.
Yeah. Then lastly, we've got Jack Hardy at Big Yid 1882, 310 to Yuma, Casino Royale, and Batman Begins.
Oh man, Batman Begins. I mean, Nolan nailed it.
Fantastic.
There's some great ones there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys should keep them coming in.
Well, yeah, I hope you do. Otherwise, we've got nothing to read out. Right then, guys, it's my turn for the next topic. So on the next podcast, it's going to be your top three survival films.
Wow.
Oh.
You
could have it all. My empire of darts. I will let you down. I will make you We've been to our local View Cinema to see the latest film in the ongoing X-Men franchise, Logan. This time round, it's the focus purely on Wolverine himself, and spoiler for anyone out there who hasn't seen the film, probably his last ever movie.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say now, if you haven't seen the film yet, we will be going into detail, specifically about a number of scenes in this film, which will contain a number of spoilers. So if you haven't seen it, go and see it now, come back, and we'll be waiting for you. Right then, let's talk about this movie. This is a big one. Mm. This is the final outing for Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine.
Yeah.
Look at your faces. Who do I want to give it to first? It's like two little kittens waiting for some food. Ben, here's some tuna. Eat up.
I think you've taken the kitten metaphor as far as it can go.
Yes.
Let's leave it there. Magnificent. Magnificent film. Undoubtedly the best of the Wolverine 3 films. For me, the best of the X-Men films, and arguably the best, or at the very least, one of the best comic book films of all time. And above that even, it's just a damn good film. Take all the qualifiers away from it. It's just a great, great, great movie. I loved it.
Gemma.
What he said.
Is that it? Brilliant. Let's
it's
score
great.
It.
See you in 2 weeks.
So you absolutely loved it.
It's brilliant. The second half did drag a little bit for me, but it's one of the first films that I've seen where I've enjoyed the villain.
Nice.
How many superhero films have we done since I've been on board, and I've always had something bad to say about the villain.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
I'm sure we'll talk about Boyd Holbrook as the villain in quite a bit of detail.
But yeah, loved it.
This is the film I have waited 20 years for in the X-Men universe to actually finally see the Wolverine we've been waiting for.
Yes.
Yep.
And it wasn't even a recast. It's the same guy we've seen on 10 films. And now we finally get it. Ben, you just said then one of the best superhero films, which is a huge statement.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it now. Captain America Winter Soldier, at this point, was my favourite film in that whole millions and millions of choices. This is now it.
Yeah.
That good. We're going to get into this now, but we finally get that 15 rating or R rating where we get the grittiness, we get the blood, we get the swearing, we get a film that's just done so right. And Ben, you're an absolute hater of Deadpool, but they use that whole let's do what we want.
Yeah, I think the R rating or 15 in this country was a gift and a curse. So on one side, it allowed for more violence. And we finally got to see Wolverine cutting motherfuckers up with his claws. Because in previous X-Men film and Wolverine films, it's been bloodless carnage. You'll see him stab his prongs into someone and then there's no blood. It's as if they're, you know, stuffed with feathers. Rubbish. Whereas this time we see him chop arms off. He's goring people in the skull, pulling out their eyeballs. It's brutal and visceral and gory and taking full effect of that R rating. The other side of the equation is it allows for fruitier language. And there was too much. It was too much swearing. Every other word was fuck. Just because you can say fuck, you don't have to. And I know that's rich coming from me, I swear like a docker, but it just seemed to me like they were taking advantage of it to the nth degree and didn't really need to. But it's a minor quibble. The R rating really helped. It really sold the brutality of this story. I thought it was a fantastic idea to make a more adult version of Wolverine.
More unrestrained and animalistic.
Mm-hmm.
The Wolverine became the Wolverine.
I think, Ben, what you just said there about the swearing, I remember when Charles Xavier says fuck, and I think it's his first word in the film, or one of them.
Yeah.
You've never said it before, so why say it now? Mm-hmm. Is that sort of just... Yeah. When he's cutting someone's throat up, do say, ah, oh, fuck you! You know, like, that's the anger.
Yeah.
But just to say it now and then, it was too much, and, you know, Deadpool did it because Deadpool is his first outing, and we see this proper film of his own.
Mm.
We don't need it now.
No, it was too much.
No.
I'm offended by this. I'm offended by this, but where do we start with this? So let's talk a bit, Ben. You're the best at this. Tell me a bit more about the story for those listeners out there that are not going to see it.
Sure. So this story is based loosely on Mark Miller's classic story, Old Man Logan, which tells the story of a Logan who's towards the end of his life. So the film hasn't used the exact story, but they've taken that kernel of an idea. So the Logan we see in this, the Wolverine we see in this, is he's grey-haired, he's lost a step of speed, his healing factor isn't working as well anymore, so when he gets gored or stabbed or shot, he can still heal, but a lot slower. He's walking with a limp. He's not this unstoppable beast that we've known him to be before. And he looks like a man who's kind of resigned to his fate just to live out the last of his years. He's on the run with Professor X. We learn throughout the film that Professor X did something. We never find out quite what, but he did something that wiped out a lot of people, including former X-Men. And it's because Professor X is starting to suffer from dementia, so he can't control his psychic powers. So the government has classified him as a weapon of mass destruction, and they want to bring him in. So now our characters are on the run. And because of that, it allows Hugh Jackman to play a whole new spectrum to this character that he's never played before. He's not just this grumpy bastard unstoppable beast. He's a broken, beaten man now. And it is, and I say this without hyperbole, it is the best Hugh Jackman has ever been for me. Not just in the Wolverine films, in anything I've ever seen him in, this is his best performance. In a perfect world, he would be nominated for an Oscar for this for me. It's an Oscar-worthy performance, but because this is a comic book movie, it won't happen.
You see the hurt in his eyes. You see that he's seen so much death and he's had to say goodbye to so many friends in his life as well. There's that staggeredness about him. Even his claws don't work properly as well. One of them gets stuck and he has to really pull it out to be retracted again. But he's a broken man and it's somebody that you've grown to love so much and you've recognised so many times, not just in comic books, but in films as well. He's a shell of himself, and you have to adjust to that. You have to adjust to the fact that this isn't the strong Wolverine that we're so used to seeing.
Yeah,
the fact he's now resigned to working as a chauffeur, and he's like hustling for prescription drugs and stuff. He's even accepted himself. He's not the man he was. Mm-hmm. He's given up.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing him just, you know, I know it sounds ridiculous, but he doesn't even look as buff. He's just wearing his normal T-shirt and jeans, not that vest with his big arms out. And he's just... It's like a frail old man.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, bruised, battered and broken. The fact that he carries around with him an adamantium bullet to suggest that, you know, one day he's just going to shoot himself in the head and that'll be the thing that kills him. He's lost.
We're not used to seeing that.
No, not at all.
And the fact that he's caring for Charles himself, who's now, this is very hard. God. This is the first 20 minutes. He's even on a whole new level of this dementia. He's just... He doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's got some sort of concept that, you know, Logan's around, but he's just dying and he wants to die. He's given up. And it's a performance by Patrick Stewart that I've not seen on camera from him in any of the X-Men films, because he's normally the powerhouse, yeah. And he's not even got that strength in him anymore. Mm. It is literally an old, frail yeah. old man.
He's the one that keeps everybody together. He's the one that keeps everybody in check. And now he can't do that anymore. He needs other people.
And I think the device that they've employed for this film, with him having some kind of dementia and not being able to control his psychic powers, so Wolverine every now and again has to give him pills to make sure that he can control himself. But when he doesn't take these pills, he has these kind of psychic spasms that causes paralysis in people. And it can, you know, cause them to die. And it's kind of inferred that was the issue that mm-hmm. led him to have to be on the run. There's one scene in the film that's one of my favourite scenes I've seen in a film in years. It's when they're on the run and they're in a hotel room, and all these bad guys, led by Boyd Holbrook's villain, have turned up to basically kill Professor X and capture the young girl who's now on the run with them, Laura, aka X-23. Professor X then has one of these psychic spasms, so everyone in this casino hotel is then locked into paralysis. Wolverine, because he's so much stronger, is the only one who can kind of battle through it, and he manages to battle through this paralysis, and the camera work is it's kind of shaky vibrations, and you see him crawl through, and he's clawing people in kind of slow motion. He's ripping through their skulls and ripping off their limbs, and it's brilliant. The cinematography and the direction of that whole sequence is breathtaking. I wanted to applaud. I wanted to stand up in the public cinema and clap. I thought it was breathtaking.
You believe it, don't you? Mm-hmm. You believe the jarredness of it as well. Yeah. You believe that people physically cannot move.
This scene as well that Ben's talking about is a good 5 minutes. It's not 30 seconds. And mm-hmm. it reminded me of the first time I watched The Matrix and saw Bullet Time. And you see that slow motion of Neo falling back. And you're like, I've never seen anything like this on screen before. It was that moment. Yes, we've seen slow down motion before. But like Ben said, it was the colour, the grittiness, the contrast. There's something about the colouring as well. It just
it seems sort of like a... It's like a lighter golden colour.
It did. Everything looked a bit weird. Like when you just wake up and rub your eyes and you can't quite see properly, but you could still make out the figures of people. And then, like Ben said, you saw this blood in slow motion coming from the jaw as they're being hit by this fist. And my God, let's stand up and clap. I'm just going to watch it again and clap. Because people, I'm sure people that are listening now knowing the scene, it's mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you don't get that anymore in cinema, where you actually see something new that's done so well that you just are in awe.
Yeah, that's exactly the word. I was in awe of that scene. I thought the direction was unbelievable.
Also, is it just me, or did this kind of feel a bit like a Western?
Oh, very much so.
Massive.
Which is why they kept showing scenes from the film Shane on TV, yeah.
I love that element to it. It felt like a completely different X-Men film as well because of that, and it worked.
So Ben just mentioned then that when they are going to the hotel here and they're going to find him, they're with Laura, which is X-23.
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about this character. So I think she's probably about 9 or 10 in real life,
something
this actress.
Like that, yeah.
My God, this impact that this girl had was the same as Hit Girl in Kick-Ass.
Absolutely, that's such an appropriate comparison. That's exactly what I thought of.
Straight away, I was like, I'm sold on you. There was something dark about this girl where they didn't know anything about her when they got dropped off. She was just sitting there eating, but she just didn't say a word to anyone. Not even hello, not a word. We didn't know anything about her. And she was left in the company of Wolverine himself. My God, this girl. Once we saw her, the action where they first come and attack Wolverine at his home, is it on the border of Mexico where they're hiding out? We then see this girl attack the baddie, and, well, then we see this action scene, which is exactly like Kick-Ass. But what did you guys think when you saw those claws and you saw the sort of the somersaults and the jumps and the punches and the...
I could have watched a whole film with that. With Daphne Keane was absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
The first half of the film, or even probably the first three quarters of the film, she is mute. She doesn't say a word. All you hear from her is just those real sort of primal screams from when she's attacking the bad guys. That is a kid that had so much loyalty and so much service to both Logan and Charles. It really fleshes out the story even more. And that kid was... She was awesome. She was really great.
She is undoubtedly one of the best child actors I've seen in a long time. I have a history of not liking child actors. We've discussed this on the podcast before. But in the last couple of years, we've had a real flush of great ones. And I would put her right up there with them. She's amazing. One thing we haven't really mentioned is the reason why she has these powers and so on is because she was effectively created in a lab using some of Wolverine's DNA. So she shares his same power. She has the claws and the invulnerability and so on. And it's a powerhouse performance. The graphics, the CGI they must use to put her into these fight scenes, because it's not really this 9-year-old doing these flips and whatnot. They must have found just a very small woman and then used some computer trickery. But it looks flawless. It never looks like a stunt double. It looks like a 9-year-old kid just wailing on these adults. It's fantastic.
I went on IMDb and the actual actress is called Midget Jones. So
nope.
That's
a lie.
That's who actually took the part
terrible.
Of that line.
Nope.
No.
Gemma, you just said that you were actually blown away by the baddie, which we have stated on this podcast that DC and Marvel, apart from Loki, never really get right.
I thought he was great. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. There was a charisma about him that worked. There was the threat about them that worked. And when you get both of those mixed, as we've seen in Loki, you've got yourself a great villain. He was fantastic. His presence was always terrifying. You knew that bad shit was about to go down. His animatronic kind of hand as well, his little robot hand, brilliant.
Yeah.
That CGI as well was just fascinating to watch, just when he pops it all back on and then the fingers go. He was great. I really, really enjoyed him. I thought he was great on screen and a formidable foe for the guys in question.
Yeah, I agree. I thought he was great fun. As you say, he was very charismatic, very suave and smug, incredibly smug. Great work from Boyd Holbrook, who I really like his work. The first thing I ever saw him in was Narcos. He's great in that. And he's going to be in the new Predator reboot as well. So he's having a big moment in his career. But I thought he was fantastic. What did you think to him, Mark?
The word that you used, the threat, the fact that that's the thing I kept thinking, this guy is a threat. The fact that he was kind of just ruthless and didn't give a shit about anything. You never saw any fear in his eyes. Even when he saw Wolverine being Wolverine and hacking pretty much everyone around him, he still thought, I can take this into my own hands, I'll be all right. But then when they actually recreated a kind of a cloned younger Wolverine that we saw that was probably, 20 years younger, who was beefed up, who had the short hair that we remember, that's when I thought, my God, this is going to be a fight that we're not going to forget for a very, very long time.
Yeah. The fight scenes between old Wolverine and young Wolverine are absolutely phenomenal.
I loved them. Me too. I didn't think they were going to work, but it looked so realistic.
Yeah.
Genuinely, like old Hugh Jackman versus young Hugh Jackman.
Choreography fight. There. Just needs to be applauded again.
Yeah,
everything needs applauding. This is how you get it right. They're not even just 2 minute fight scenes. Again, a good 5 minute brawl where it's not just fake, where you get the getting these silly old Batman moves. You get the punches that you can imagine would bloody hurt, and you see the way that the face is bleeding. Yeah. It's not over the top where it's like Kill Bill sprayed out blood.
No.
It's the genuine amount of blood you would get if you got punched in the eye by this guy who's, let's be honest, built like a brick shithouse. Absolute nails.
The grit.
The use of the younger cloned Wolverine is a good shout out to the comic book fans, because in the comics, there were times when Wolverine would go into berserker rages and would just be killing people left, right and centre, and would then sort of come out of a trance once he'd been in a berserker rage. And they've never really used that in the films, because they always have to make him a sympathetic character. So they've been able to have their cake and eat it by bringing in the berserker rage in the guise of this cloned X-24, they call him, don't they? So that was very smart and a nice little nod to the fans.
Yeah, it really worked.
So we're seeing that we're all quite buzzing at the moment, which is great. I'm loving how much we're all enjoying this. Yeah. So let's talk about the death of Professor X. Ugh.
I felt cheated.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
It didn't feel right. Of course he got killed, but I felt the level of emotion wasn't used to what it could have been. So I was sad, but it didn't make me sort of gut-wrenchingly fall to my knees and sob at the sky.
Was this because it was about halfway into the film, so you still had a long way to go knowing? If it was the final scene, you'd have been, oh my God, this is the...
absolutely.
I'm distraught.
And I think as well the trailer alluded to the fact that we were going to see a big death. Mm. Yeah.
See, I take your point. I don't think the death in and of itself was particularly grand and powerful, but I thought the reactions of Logan and Laura to the death were what sold it for me. Again, Hugh Jackman just on imperious form. When the tears are coming into his eyes and you can see the cogs going through his brain, he's processing it, but also trying to refuse to accept that it's real. And then Laura's reaction is a smaller, subtler reaction. She first gets into the Jeep and Professor X is dead in the back, and she just looks around in horror when she realises that he's dead. And it's really subtle. It's only a few seconds from Daphne Keane, but it's brilliantly done.
It's the realisation that he's responsible for his death as well, because he's brought him there. He didn't do what he honoured and said that he would look after him and keep him away from everyone. It's his responsibility. He's got the blood on his hands. He needs to accept the responsibility. At the same time, kind of being a father figure to Laura and showing that they can still get past this, my God, it puts you in the mindset of what he'd be going through. And I wasn't crying, but I was upset. Mm-hmm. I thought, I've lost that character that I've been watching on screen for 15 years now, that I've grown very, very close to.
And that whole scene takes place on a farm. And for me, the farm element of it was possibly the one misstep in the film. So what happens is Logan, X and Laura are out on the road, and then some family get spooked by a van and their horses go running. So they come to their aid. This family then says, come on, you look like you need a meal, come back to our house. And they feed them. Wolverine and them then decide to stay the night. And lo and behold, it then leads to the bad guys finding them and killing the farmer, his wife and their kid. And to me, it was shit storytelling because the characters knew they were being tracked. They'd already been tracked to the hotel. They knew they were on the bad guy's radar. So why would you go and stay in the house overnight with a lovely family when you know you've got these people tracking you? That's always going to end in bloodshed. That was just bad storytelling from me because it was illogical.
Yeah, I can't argue. Yeah, exactly. I think it just added to the amount of upset and distraught that, you know, the bad guys would just innocently kill the whole family. Mm-hmm. And the it just brought upon the death then of Professor X even harsher in the bed of a stranger who didn't he say, I've had a lovely night, I've had a fantastic meal. I've missed nights like this.
It's younger Wolverine.
Yeah, I've missed this, and then bam.
This is the problem. It's sometimes writers being too clever for their own good. So the reason why they've done this is because they wanted Wolverine to see what having a family life is like. They wanted him to see what a nice, happy family together and the kids eating dinner together is like. That's the point they wanted to make. And Professor X, as you say, he comments on this saying, I've had the best night I've had, blah, 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 blah. That's all well and good, but if the end result of that is the family being murdered because you're stupid enough to stay in their house when you know you're being tracked, bad writing.
Yeah. Bad writing.
Yeah.
Maybe that's
up
why
your
I feel,
game.
Yeah, maybe that's why I feel cheated.
So then we're taken to the place where we actually get to see Laura's wish to go to Eden. What did you guys think of when we actually, it's a long road trip here, and we get this kind of Western feel again, long open roads, really dusty and gritty and raw again, and we see them kind of growing a bit closer to each other, and he's becoming a bit more of a father figure. I mean, when they go shopping on the way, I think she goes and gets some sunglasses, and he's sticking up for her when she's trying to steal them, and you see that bond of like a father and daughter kind of growing, which I think worked really well. And that road trip we needed of, I think he said it was like 2 days to get to Eden, but he still did it and took her. So what did you guys think when the payoff was there? We actually arrived on this place of Eden, and I think it looked beautiful, the place. I don't know where it was filmed, but it looked stunning.
It looked cool, the fact that there was all these other kids that were mutants as well. So maybe are we thinking of a possible nod to something in the future, maybe 10 years down the line? But I love the kids. I thought they were great. That kid with the little serrated teeth as well.
Mm. Yeah, so there were other kids who'd been created in the lab along with X-23 and had escaped and come to this Eden place. Simon Kinberg, one of the writers and producers on the X-Men franchise, has said that we will definitely see Daphne Keene as X-23 again.
Yay.
Which leads me to believe they're going to do something with that group of young mutants. It'd be foolish not to introduce these new characters with this wide array of powers and then we'll never hear from them again. It would just be stupid. Especially because people are responding to this film so positively. Use them. Get them in something.
Mm.
Someone we've not mentioned at all, and someone I was very impressed with, was Stephen Merchant as Caliban. I expected Merchant to be his usual sort of self. I was expecting him to be like Darren Lamb from Extras, but he wasn't. He was this kind of old worrying man type character who was fretting about things and wanted to make sure everyone was okay and was miserable and grunting. And I found his performance really, really moving, more dramatic than I expected to be. He gets some heroism in at the end. I loved him. I thought he was absolutely brilliant in this.
I like the fact he kept his Bristolian accent as well. Yeah. He ain't changing for nobody.
The amount of praise he's getting, every review I see, every tweet that is going out to this is mentioning him. I mean, it took me about 5 minutes to stop thinking this is the Ogmeister. I was sitting there because, like you said, he kept the accent.
Yeah.
But my God, this guy isn't an actor. He's more of a writer.
Mm.
You know, we've seen him in some TV. Yes, we have. We know, is it Hello Ladies?
Hello Ladies, yeah.
Yeah, it was a good show.
But as a major part in a huge blockbuster, let's be honest, this is raking it in right now. People are saying this is one of the best films out there. And everyone is saying his performance is fantastic. So good on him, man. And, you know, to look like the bicked head and the whiteness and the tiredness of his eyes. And it wasn't an easy part to play. It wasn't just a little bit of a camera. He walks past and just says a few lines. It was bloody good. Yeah, good on you, man.
I was really gutted when he was on that slab, when he popped his clogs.
Yeah.
As well, that was really heartbreaking. I think that probably got me a little bit. I was like, because don't they just use, they say, oh, we'll use him for something. He's worth a little bit of whatever.
Yeah, so the evil scientist played by Richard E. Grant is going to essentially extract his DNA so they can make one of their horrible hybrid creatures.
That got me there. Mm. That got me good.
So that's two deaths down. We've not even talked about the third one yet.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Now we're in Eden. We've seen all these mutants being attacked. They do as much as they can. Ben.
Wolverine dies. He saves the kids. He kills the evil younger Wolverine and then he pops his clogs and they bury him.
Oh, God, that was a bit sad at the end.
Very sad.
Please tell me this had some effect on you, please.
It did, especially the bit that had me the most was as she's walking away, she's in absolute bits and tears, kind of reminiscent to the ending of Shane, when the kid, like, completely loses his shit over that. They have a cross, which they make out of sticks, And as X-23 walks away, she tilts the cross and it becomes an X. Lump in the throat.
Yeah. That was a great final shot. The credits roll immediately after that and it was a perfect way, perfect little capper.
Johnny Cash playing.
Mm-hmm.
For 1 second, I thought, please end now. Please end now. Don't do some silly little thing where you're going to do another scene now where we see a
claw comes out.
Or, no, not even that. Though,
like
that
the dirt moves like it does in Superman.
Or even that then we have a scene of Laura like packing a suitcase and like, you know, just for the next, that was just, it was heart-wrenching and that's it.
It made me laugh that the three of us, even though we'd all read that there was no post-credit scene, we all stayed in the cinema until the end and the lights came up like, no, there's not one.
But we weren't the only ones. No, there was about 20 in the cinema.
But what a fitting legacy to have no post-end credit scene. Though.
Yeah, it would have been really, really annoying had they tried to tack something onto the end of that.
Just the grave, like it's like Evil Dead, just the three metal bars rising up slowly. Yeah. And then and a question mark.
Yeah. It would have been absolutely awful. What do you think about the director, James Mangold, saying that he wants to release a black and white version? He wanted it to be in black and white from the get-go, but the studio wouldn't allow it. But he wants to release his director's cut.
I mean, they've done it recently on the Blu-ray release of Mad Max.
Yeah.
And I would never go out and buy it again. I would just switch my telly to black and white. You know what I mean? It's that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think it is a bit crazy when people do this. Like, are you needing more money? Is that why you're doing it? If he wanted to do it in black and white, why didn't you? What I am grateful for is this is his director's cut. He's come out this week and said there is no, guess what? The version you never saw at the cinema.
Yeah.
If he does release it on Blu-ray with the black and white, okay. I'm not ever going to sit and watch it in black and white.
Seems pointless to me. One thing that didn't make the cut, it was never filmed, but apparently in the original scripts, there were flashbacks that showed you what Professor X did.
Ooh.
But Mangold got rid of them and said it's kind of better if it's left to your imagination. You can kind of infer from what's said in the dialogue. You don't need to go back and see it. It would have made it too explicit.
There's that air of mystery as well. Yeah. It just alludes to what it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've said the whole film. It seems very positive, but now's the big moment. You're scoring Logan. And Gemma, I'm going to give you the responsibility of starting this score.
Okay. It's a great film. It's a bloody great film. Teeny tiny bit dragging at the end, but I think it's a well-deserved and high 8 out of 10 for me.
Very nice. Ben?
Oh, it's a 9. It's absolutely a 9. One of my favourite comic book films of all time. One of my favourite films of any stripe that I've seen in the last couple of years. Beautiful, beautiful film. And I really, really want to go and see it again.
Let's go. It's the film I've been waiting for. We finally got to see Wolverine as an angry Wolverine that can do what the fuck he wants. And I use the word fuck because I can. It's 9. It's always going to be. This is the best film I've seen this year. We might only be in March, but you heard me how much I gushed over La La Land. This is the best film I've seen this year, and good luck to everyone else that comes out. You've got a high bar to beat.
Indeed. I said on the last episode that so far this year, my favourite film was Hacksaw Ridge, and something would have to go a long way to beat that. The next week, it has. That didn't last long, did it? Yeah, Logan's my favourite film of the year so far also.
So there we have it. Logan gets a skip to the end, 9 out of 10. Competition time! Oh yeah!
Have you just followed through?
Do you like that? Got a bit of the old Hulk Hogan in there as well.
So. I was going to say it was more Macho Man, I thought.
Oh, Macho Man, sorry. Yeah. What am I on about? Well, it's a bit of wrestling in it anyway.
Yeah, it's fine.
As you just heard then, if you could make out what I was saying, it's competition time. It's the time we give lots of good stuff away. And to thank you all for basically tuning in. So let's start off with the competition from last week's episode. If you'd listened, there was lots and lots to give away. Let's start with the Last Exit to Nowhere Close Encounters t-shirt, which is beautiful. The question I put out there was, who played Roy in the movie? So Gemma, you obviously talked about this on the rewatch.
You did.
Who is it?
It's Richard Dreyfuss.
It is. And Lee Morgan will be winning that on Facebook, so thank you very much. Secondly, we have the Headshot Clothing t-shirt. Did you see the design for the Walking Dead print?
Yeah.
It's been really popular. I mean, gorgeous. It was the Walking Dead convention in London this year, and I think they sold out of all of them.
Awesome.
It's been absolutely awesome. So to win this t-shirt, we put the question out there. What's the character played by Andrew Lincoln Cord in The Walking Dead?
Rick Grimes.
It is. And Charmaine Hannah has won that on Twitter, so you'll be getting that t-shirt. God, we're giving loads away. Good old friends, Dark Bunny Tees, they gave us a Walking Dead bundle. All you had to do was leave us a iTunes rating. We've had loads in the last few weeks, so thanks very much for this. And it was a 5-star rating from Rachel, which is at The Bendy Show. And we've got a second bundle to give away to Katie, which is Out of Tyne, T-Y-N-E. So we're going to give both of those guys a bundle. So thanks very much for leaving us ratings. And finally, we had the Star Wars t-shirt that Ben, I think you wore last week and
the
got given.
The Tauntaun one.
Yeah, how nice is that from Dark Bunny? Who directed The Empire Strikes Back?
Irving Kershner?
Yes, but you've already won one, so you don't have We're going to give one to Barry underscore KD. You'll all be getting t-shirts. This is going to be great, because next week we're going to go on Twitter and see all these people in loads of new kitted out gear.
Yeah.
Let's move on and give some more stuff away. First of all, let's celebrate our review of Logan with a Logan hip flask, a t-shirt and a hoodie. That's nice. Pretty beautiful. Let's make it really easy. Who plays Logan in the film? If you just rewind back a few minutes or go on Google, you'll find that out. We'll give that away. Also, our good friends at Dark Bunny have given us an Aliens t-shirt, which is really smart. Let's make this really, really simple. Who directed Aliens? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, simple one. Yeah. We'll give a couple of those away as well. You may have seen this week a new t-shirt on the market for Skip to the End.
Oh.
The official first ever available Skip to the End in the Stranger Things font style t-shirt. Selling really well online, which is good.
Like hotcakes.
Yes, massively. And if you haven't bought one yet, they're £10. And to our American listeners, that's about something like, well, the money's great. It's about $10.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, it's a hell of a cheap price for a great t-shirt. But we're going to give one away. One.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all you need to do is leave us an iTunes rating. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to make it fair that everyone that's ever given us a rating will also be put into the pot. So if you leave us a rating over the next 2 weeks, we'll put you in. And on the next episode, we'll pick it out there and then. And you'll get the first ever printed Skip to the End t-shirt. Not even me, Ben or Gemma get that.
Indeed.
That's very lucky.
What about the people who want to buy one? Where have they got to go?
Every person that's listening right now should go and buy one. So go on darkbunnytees.com. It's the first one you see. But if you don't, just search Skip to the End. You know, I'll be putting it on Twitter. I'll be putting it on Facebook. I'll be putting it on Instagram. Get this t-shirt, because this isn't a bullshit thing. Once they've gone, they've gone. We're doing a limited run and we're not making any money off it. We're just going to basically put it back into getting you guys more and more t-shirts.
And for those of you who buy one, thank you for those guys who've already bought one and those who are about to. When you do, please take a photo of yourself in it and put it up on Twitter at STT Podcast, or post it to us on Facebook, wherever you want to put it, Instagram, however it might be. But I personally, I want to see people wearing our Skip to the End t-shirt in the weirdest possible places. I want to see you in your Skip to the End t-shirt at Stonehenge. I want to see you in your Skip to the End t-shirt at the top of Ben Nevis. I want to see you in your Skip to the End t-shirt at your granddad's funeral. The weirder, the better for me.
And how can we do? Should we put a hashtag out there? Ooh. So if we can search for it. How about show us your end? Yeah?
Yes.
So hashtag show us your end. So if you've got a photo, and what we'll do, we'll put, well, again, we'll award you a speedboat, okay? You'll get a speedboat.
That is not a legit competition.
Terms and conditions, you will not get a speedboat. But yes, you'll get a speedboat.
Yeah.
No, you won't. And also, I'm just building this up now. Our good friend Howie, who works at Richard Sounds in Preston, has promised us some amazing prizes for the next episode. So I'm thinking some sort of electrical goods, because he works at Richard Sounds.
Yeah.
All he wants you to do is go on the Richard Sounds Twitter page, at Richard Sounds, and just follow them. And he said the more followers we get, the bigger the prize. So in 2 weeks' time, we're going to have some new, hopefully amazing prizes coming from that guy. So this is going to be great. I'm already excited. So I'm going to announce the winners of all those t-shirts, the speedboat, the Skip to the End t-shirt. We'll get around it. We'll get a little toy.
Yeah, a little Tonka toy.
Great idea.
We'll stick it in a jiffy bag and post it then. I'm going to get out of it then. So I never said a real one.
They'll never know.
Yeah, cool. Anyway, yep, I'll announce that in 2 weeks. And yeah, stay tuned.
It's that time again. It's movie masturbate time. On the last episode, we picked the name from the pot and it turned out to be none other than Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jakey G.
Yeah.
We love that man. Let's be honest about
Don't
it
we?
Now. What a guy to pick.
Oh, man. So what we're going to be doing is each of us are coming with a favourite role that Jakey boy has done in his career. And oh my God, I don't know about you guys. I think I say this on every episode. I bloody loved researching the shit out of this one.
Me too.
Your choice of words saying we're going to be coming didn't really go down very well when it it's that's well, a bit vulgar.
It is masturbate.
It is a bit vulgar. This is a family show for the...
I'll put the tissue down then.
Thank you.
There we go. So I'm going to throw this over to Mark. I want to know what your favourite Jake Gyllenhaal performance is.
My motto is, if you win the lottery, you've got to buy the money to buy the ticket.
It's mine too. Mm-hmm.
There we go. Nightcrawler, baby.
Mm-hmm. Had to be.
Oh, my Lord. This film is the film that makes me love him but detest him at the same time.
Yeah.
And he's the same character. He's the same character for 2 hours. He's the same human being. He's not a split personality. I warm to him. I'm rooting for him. But I also want to spit on him and kick him in the face. That is a hell of a performance.
Yeah.
He is a mastermind at acting in everything he does. I've never really seen him in a bad film, but I'm picking this because it's my favourite performance of his on screen. I'm not saying it's his best ever, but it arguably could be.
Yeah.
This film, we went to see at the cinema. We reviewed it as Skip to the End. And I think it was one of those things, like The Guest, like other films, that when I look back, it was way better than we gave it credit for.
We gave it a 7, which is not good enough.
Jesus. Yeah. To put that into context, listeners, we gave something like Fantastic Four about a 6. We're not very good on that one.
Oh, dear.
I would now give that film an 8 or 9.
Absolutely, I would too.
Mm-hmm. I've actually got on here what you've said. It blurs the line between an actor and a character.
Wow.
One of the things that you said also is that he doesn't change for 2 hours, and that was intentional. I read something the other day that said the director and screenwriter, Dan Gilroy, he didn't want there to be a backstory or a standard character arc. He wanted you to see from the get-go that he was this amoral arsehole. So the first scene you see of this character, Lou Bloom, he is stealing like copper wire or something like that from a building site. A security guard tries to stop him. He beats the shit out of the security guard and steals his watch. So from minute one, you know this guy is a sociopathic, amoral weirdo. And he maintains that for the 2 hours. There's no growth. There's no redemption for him. He's just that guy for 2 hours.
The fact this character has so much power... When he's going to these television studios to try and get work, he kind of windles his way into scenarios that he can give himself the upper hand. Even with the big bosses, he tries to manipulate this studio boss in a way that he even says that if you don't sleep with me, I won't give you the footage that you need for your studio.
Yeah.
This will get you the ratings. This will get you on prime TV. I've got footage here instantly before anyone else has seen this bloke being chopped up in a car. It's gruesome. It's going to get you those views. And he even gets this power of getting her into bed to shag.
Yeah.
Let's be honest about it. And he isn't the guy that would normally pull these types of women, these studio bosses, these executives that are always about the money and the show and the lifestyle. And he's got her wrapped around his little finger.
He looks like a lizard. This is a character that is so cold-blooded. You hardly ever see him blink throughout the film. I think something that we picked up before in the past in previous podcasts.
Yeah.
He puts his needs first always, and everybody around him are either pawns or they're just dispensable. Once he's got the use of him, they are no use to him whatsoever. And we see that with the unfortunate character that Riz Ahmed plays.
Indeed, yeah. So he's, what we've not said for those people who haven't seen it, is that Jake Gyllenhaal's character of Lewis Bloom is what's known as a stringer, which is a freelance journalist who goes out with a camera taking film of serious events, murders, crashes, etc., and then sells them on to the news people. And as you've just mentioned there, Gemma, he takes on an assistant played by Riz Ahmed, who towards the back end of the film, he allows to get shot. He calls over Ahmed when there's been a crash with this fleeing criminal, and he tells Riz Ahmed's character that the guy's dead, so come over here and film it. The guy wasn't dead, he's alive, and then he shoots Riz Ahmed's character dead, and he films this. And as you say, everyone to him is just a pawn. It's someone to be used or to step over. The thing about this character, sociopathy is a very difficult thing to portray without just going into wild-eyed mania, but he doesn't do that. He always seems like a hollow shell. He always seems like someone that is wearing a human suit. He's pretending to be a human as best as he can. It's a magnificent performance. And the thing that pisses me off royally about this performance is that it wasn't nominated for an Oscar. Whereas in the very same year, in the what would have been the same category, Steve Carell's Mr. Burns impression was nominated.
Foxcatcher?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
That was nominated, but this wasn't. What a travesty that is.
It makes me want to spit.
Yeah.
The fact he didn't... I wouldn't have minded if he didn't win, but to not even get a nomination is just a... I think we should riot. Even though it's gone now, it's been a while.
Yeah, I think 3 years late. Yeah.
I think we should cause havoc.
I can get a few Molotov cocktails on the go.
And the thing about him as well is the look. It's not just the way he carries himself. It's how much weight he lost. He lost something like 30 pounds by just eating salads and chewing gum, apparently. That was his meals for some days. And he looks so gaunt and he looks feral. And as you say, he kind of looks like a lizard. And it fits with the character because he's a guy who literally stalks the night, as the name would suggest. Initially, he was just a criminal who worked at night, and then he became this stringer. He looks like a guy who doesn't look after himself. He looks like he doesn't sleep or eat. Again, I've said this before on the podcast, I hate using the word bravery when it comes to actors, but when they make these kind of decisions to change their entire body, their entire look, just for the purpose of this part, there is a certain element of bravery in that, that you're putting yourself out there to be judged.
Amazing. I'm going to go home and watch it tonight.
Yeah, me too.
And again, this is a sad factor. It's going to be mentioned a few times, but Paxton was in this film.
Yeah.
Bloody hell, he was.
As his rival, basically. He would go out to the, footage, wouldn't he, before him, and they'd be trying to catch each other out. And in one point, Bill Paxton even offers him to come and work for him and say, look, let's join forces. We can take over this place together. At this point, he's got so much power himself. Gyllenhaal's like, nah, I'm all right. I can do this all on my own. Makes the mega money, gets the sports car, the top high-tech gear, to the point where no one else can even get anywhere near him. He's not even on the level of him, God. But everyone forgets Bill Paxton was in this movie.
Yeah, I did too.
And he's really great in it. Really great in it.
I miss him.
One last point I want to make about this film. The way he is so venal and sociopathic and hollow and gaunt face, and he has this big weird grin, I couldn't help but think, watching this film again the other day, he'd make a hell of a Joker.
I was thinking the exact same thing then, yeah.
Don't you think?
Definitely.
Don't you think Gyllenhaal should be next in line the next time they bring the Joker back?
I'm kind of wishing he was in Suicide Squad now, because I wasn't blown away by that Joker at all. So sorry, Jared. Yeah. But
Jake, yes. Jared, no.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. If you're listening right now, anyone that can make a film, why don't we get him in? You know, Ben Affleck, cast him in The Batman. Why not? It's not too soon.
Sorry, Mr. Leto. We've had enough. See you later.
Well, Ben, I don't think you're on the same page as me and Gemma this week.
Of course I am. I picked Nightcrawler. This is Best by a distance, man.
By the way.
As much as I love Donnie Darko and Prisoners, he's fantastic in. This is, in my opinion, not only my favourite, but I would say objectively his best work. And I think a lot of people agree. You see it. Mm-hmm. You see all the reviews for this film said the same thing.
Do you want to hear what social media said? Because this is like you just said, you hear these films. We've got Quinn Jupiter who said Donnie Darko. We love that film. Mm-hmm. Dan Ettles has put Zodiac.
Yes, fantastic. Ooh.
Jim Bob, Bubble Boy, which is one of the early films.
I've not seen that.
It was. But it's all self-explanatory, really.
Yeah. What's that film about?
Chris Slomansky, Southpaw.
This is the boxing one, right?
It was okay. I quite enjoyed it, but it's the same as every other boxing film. All boxing films have the exact same story, don't they?
Down the Hall Pod, Brothers.
Yeah, that was all right.
Not great. Matt, which is At The Album Web, End of Watch.
Great film. Love
Never
that.
Seen it.
Oh, it's really good.
I've heard it's brilliant. Gavin at Mini Media Review, Enemy.
Still haven't seen that one.
Enemy.
That's big on my list. It's supposed to be, it's one that I'm going to watch very soon. At Shampoo, I've put Brokeback Mountain.
I still haven't seen that.
That's a
great
film.
And finally, Boo AC has put, which is a great film, Prisoners, which you just mentioned. Super. What a movie.
Him and Jackman. Unreal.
One I didn't see a lot of is Source Code. Has any of you seen that film?
I have, yeah.
It was just okay.
Just
wasn't
average.
Right.
That's the one film where I think he's not done an orbit by any means, but it's that one film that wasn't up there with. Look at that list, man. Yeah.
It worried me because it was Duncan Jones who directed it, and he'd done such great work with Moon and then did that and has now done Warcraft. But he's got a new one coming out soon called Mute, which looks very, very good.
Fingers crossed.
Well, I think it's time to get lubed up and start masturbating again.
Grim.
It's my turn now.
Go on then.
Go for it.
Drum roll.
On the next episode, we will be mass debating over Sigourney Weaver.
Wow!
Lovely.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing.
Our rewatch this week is The Life of Brian, the Monty Python comedy classic from 1979, directed by Terry Jones. The film stars Graham Chapman, Terry Gilliam, Eric Idle, Terry Jones and Michael Palin, aka the Monty Python lot. A baby is born on Christmas Day and is visited by three wise men who have followed a shining star in the sky to pay homage to what they believe is the Son of God. Unfortunately for them, they visit the wrong house and quickly realise they visited the birth of Brian Cohen instead of another more well-known baby of that time. We then follow Brian in his adult life as he continues to be mistaken for the Messiah.
That is it. Yeah.
That is all we have to say about the synopsis.
But as we know,
he's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy.
Bring back the Imitation Game.
Oh, my God, yes. So, of course, it is regarded as one of the greatest British comedies, if not greatest comedies of all time.
Yep.
So I do know that, you know, it all has a bit of a special place in our hearts, but obviously we're going to be rewatching it and we want a bit more meat to the bones. So, Ben, I would like to throw this to you in the very first instance.
I bloody love this film. I think it is a masterpiece, a legit masterpiece. The funny thing is, I've never really been a fan of the Monty Python TV series. The sketches were always very hit and miss for me, but I love the films. I love this and The Meaning of Life and so on and so forth. But this one's the best one. It's just a great idea. They've taken what is a very simple idea. Let's essentially retell the life of Jesus, but with a guy who is Jesus adjacent. He grew up in the next manger, as it were, and you know, riff on that. And it's a great film. It's hilariously funny. As would fit the fact that it's made by sketch comedians, it feels more like a loose connection of sketches that are connected by the tissue of Brian. It feels very much like a sketch movie, but it works because all the individual sketches. So you think about, like, you know, what have the Romans ever done for us? That section, and you know when you first meet the Judean people's front, and there are all these little set scenes, or when you first meet the ex-leper, that feel like their own innate little sketches, and they're all funny, and then it all just pulls together in this beautiful, beautiful film. Love it. One of my favourites.
Not on the same page, I'm afraid.
Boo to you.
But not on the level of hating. So I think this film is hilarious. I grew up watching it. I've always had it on in the house. You know, it's one of those ones that's on telly and you always seem to watch. And it's just pure genius writing. You don't get better than the Monty Python. The series, everything they do is just pure comedy gold. Ben just said there exactly the word I was going to use, sketch. It feels like one big sketch that should work on stage. It could work on a production. It could work on a TV series. Mm. But they did it on the scale of a big movie. Mm-hmm. I love these guys, but watching it again, and I haven't seen it for 10 years, I just got a bit frustrated with it. And that's just being honest. And I don't want to piss on your parade. It's still a great, funny film. I was just getting irritable, and I don't know. Perhaps my taste has changed as I've grown. I just didn't enjoy it as much as I wanted to. I was really excited. I can't wait to watch this. I think I'm just dead inside. I'm sorry, but I have to be honest. I liked it. I just didn't love it. And I remember as a kid loving it. And I think I watch other stuff now. I watch Curb. I watch this. And I just don't find it as funny.
No, you're right, Mark. It's definitely not as good as Mole Rats.
That's exactly what's happened. Jesus. I've been watching stuff like Mole Rats.
That's why you're dead inside.
And Tusk. And they're the sort of comedies, you know. American Pie, The Reunion. You know, this is where I've gone.
God.
I can't take the fact away that these guys are the dog's bollocks at writing. There is no one funnier. I didn't get to go and see them when they came the last couple of years back on stage. And I don't know if it's just a bit of a ka-ching, ka-ching, need a bit more money. And I'm getting very annoyed that John Cleese is in adverts for selling insurance or whatever it is at the moment.
Being Basil Fawlty in the adverts. Bloody sellout.
But this is your choice. I'm not pissing on your parade.
No.
I just, you know, when we go and you've listened to this every week, guys, we usually go, oh my God, I forgot how great it was. I watched it again and it totally reminded me why I fell in love with this film. This is the first time I've watched it and gone, meh.
That's my word.
I'm upset.
Auditions for my replacement will start next week. Contact Ben or Gemma at the usual address.
It's a shining example of classic British humour for me. It really is. It's almost the foundation, the building blocks of what makes British humour so great. It seemed very ahead of its time when watching it again. You know, it is a very satirical piece of comedy. And when you look back at the 70s and early 80s as to when the release was happening, it was mired with so much controversy, of course, with it being a religious topic that it was covering. But this is what I want to throw out to you guys as well. Do you see the controversial reasons as to why people may have had a problem with this film, or do you not?
Yeah, I mean, I understand why it was controversial, because a lot of people who complained about it hadn't seen it, for one thing. Mm-hmm. They heard about, you know, what they thought it was and then decided to get up in arms. So we're talking about Christians, generally speaking. It effectively is a film that's misunderstood by people who don't understand satire. It is not having a go at Jesus. It is not having a go at God. If anything, it's having a pop at organised religion and religious fervour. People who are too happy to jump on a bandwagon and follow someone who they believe is a messiah. That's the kind of joke it's having. But it's not having a go at Christianity specifically. You know, the film is at great pains to show that Brian isn't Jesus. we see that there's two mangers at the start of the film. We also see the scene with the ex-leper who says, oh, Jesus cured me of my leprosy. We're told Jesus is over there doing his business. This is Brian. We're not having a go at Jesus. It's a different character entirely. So it was unnecessary for me. To call it blasphemous is nonsense. It's satire.
Mm-hmm.
Grow up.
I completely agree. I thought it was absolute bollocks, the fact that so many people were up in arms in it. You hear the stories about what happened during the controversy as well. A number of local councils banned this film, and including some councils that didn't even have a cinema in the area.
Just ban it anyway.
Yeah, they just banned it because of what Ben said. They heard about the subject and went, no, this is wrong. This is absolutely wrong. Bollocks to you. It also resulted in some coach parties being organised to go visit some of these places, like, for example, in Cornwall, where the film was banned, and in Exeter, where the film wasn't banned. Some councils didn't ban it for some reasons, but...
Because they had sense of humour?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what the country, I think, was lacking probably at that period of time as well. It's not copying. Even that scene where he's running away from that, from all those people that decided he is the gospel, and he goes, no, fuck off.
Yeah.
How would you like us to fuck off?
This film does not take the mick out of Jesus Christ once.
No.
Mm-mm.
Done. It takes the mick out of those clueless morons that go and fanatically follow a certain religion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry if that offends you if you're listening, but get over it.
Yeah. It's having a go at humans. It's having a go about fallible humans, not about deities or, you know, Jesus and prophets and whatnot. People just need to get over themselves and grow the fuck up, quite frankly. So going back to Gemma's point about it being barred from certain councils, I read the other day that it was barred in Bournemouth until 2015.
You've got Jesus to be
able to film from 1979. If you live in Bournemouth, you could only legally go and see it in a cinema 2 years ago.
Can you imagine being like the next town by like putting it on every now and then at your local cinema just to get people to be allowed to see it?
Yeah.
Does it make you quite sad that we don't get anything as political as this anymore, where we get those films? Remember when The Exorcist came out and there's banning it and we're not going to go and see this? We get nothing now. I think the last one's probably Borat, where people was like, oh, I'm not going to go and see that.
I would say Four Lions. I would say Four Lions is basically a modern equivalent of this.
That's the closest. But then there was never, I never remember turning on the news and people being like, you know, oh, we're not going to go and see this. And people outside with the big boards.
Do you know, the last film that I can think of that had that kind of controversy where it wasn't allowed to be publicised, The Interview.
Oh, yeah. I heard it's not very good. Did any of you actually see that?
I did. I watched it not that long ago, maybe six months ago. It's not great.
But no, that's the last film that I can seriously think of where people actively tried to stop it being shown.
Yeah.
But
I find it really insulting. I find censorship in general insulting because what you're saying is you humans are too stupid to know what's good for you. We have to tell you what's good for you. You can't, as adults, make your own damn mind up. We're making your mind up for you. And it's fucking insulting and degrading.
It is. It really is, because...
Show the film. People will go see it if they want to. They won't if they don't want to.
Didn't a big backer pull out of financing the film as well because of this?
And I think it was EMI were going to finance
it.
And then George Harrison had to come in and pay for it himself by mortgaging his house.
And he was a fucking legend.
Yeah.
he effectively saved the life of Brian.
Mm-hmm.
He's Brian's lifesaver.
I'm glad we got that off our chest. I feel it's quite nice to kind of
now breathe.
Break it down.
There we go.
So Monty Python, have you guys actually seen any of the TV stuff? All the hundreds and hundreds of hours? You love it
all? There's not that much. There was only four seasons of between, I think, like 13 and six episodes, depending on the season. There's not that much of it. Mm. And it's hit and miss. You know, you've got classics like the Parrot Sketch and so on, and Ministry of Funny Walks and all that sort of stuff. But there's a lot of kind of stuff that you shrug at or maybe smirk. I don't think the TV shows are as strong as the films are. I think they're better crafted.
And what about the other films? Because I've not seen any of the other films.
Holy Grail is fantastic.
Holy shit, you've not seen Holy Grail?
No.
Ooh. Unreal, get on it.
Do I put that at top of the list or shall I?
Yeah. Meaning of Life on, I can give or take it.
Yeah, that is a sketch film.
It is.
Quite literally, that is just a collection of sketches. But, but the Holy Grail is a story and a very, very good one. Very
funny. Brilliant.
I like that you're educating me here about this.
The actors in this film, I love all the Pythons, I think they're fantastic. But for me in this film, Michael Palin is on some next level shit. He is unreal in this, as Pontius Pilate and as Big Nose at the start of the film. Every one of his characters, they're all so different and all laugh out loud funny. He's an absolute master for me.
Oh, for me, Graham Chapman, he is essentially the heart of this film. Mm. And I love the fact he just wants a normal life. He wants to shag Judith. He wants to get on the party train and just have a good time with her.
Yeah.
He wants to get away from his overbearing mum. But of course he loves her and everything. But he doesn't want this kind of life. He just wants a nice, simple life. What more can he ask for?
I like Terry Jones as Brian's mother.
Yes.
I just love it. Is it quite weird now that I just, when you mention them, Palin people, these people now are just doing normal stuff. Like a wildlife show, or they're doing books on like gardening.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I thought it would be with them till they die. Mm. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we joked then about John Cleese selling out and doing these stupid home insurance things as Basil Fawlty. It's insulting. It's it's horrible. But Palin, I saw doing a Waterstone signing a few months ago of a book about traveling the world. He's basically doing like a Attenborough sort of style thing.
Yeah,
they must, they must inside still want to be on stage doing this stupid humour. It doesn't leave you, does it? It's like a musician, like the Beatles. They're never going to stop playing instruments. Surely these guys still want to be... I know they can't go on stage and do these shows, and they did for a charity event, but they must have it in them where they just want to keep writing.
Eric Idle does things like the Spamalot musical, and you know, he pops up on TV shows every now and again. Cleese is doing his adverts, and you know, whatever will pay him.
He'll be on the episode next week if we can return him in a t-shirt and some headphones.
You know what? Kudos goes to Eric Idle as well. He does always look on the bright side of life, which is the defining moment of the whole film.
Yeah.
He recorded it originally in his normal singing voice, but it didn't have that same effect, so he added a Cockney accent, and of course, the song was born.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it.
Fantastic.
It is an amazing ending. I have to admit, that ending to a film is... You see, this is what happens with the rewatch. I then start warming up a bit, and I was like, yeah, okay, I agree with this. And I, we did it with Freddy Got Fingered. I was like, it's the biggest pile of shit ever. By the end of it, I ordered the steelbook. I got a tattoo on my arm. I went home and got sausages stapled to my fingers.
But... Change your name to Deepole to Tom Green. Yeah, the usual.
Speaking of the music, obviously... That song ends the film on a perfect note. But I love the intro music.
There's, love the intro!
It's a kind of Shirley Bassey-style James Bond number about the life of Brian. It's a fantastic song.
And then he got spotty. Yes, he got spotty. Genius. I watched this with my other half, and I didn't realise how much of a fan he is of this film. Mm. He was quoting the film as we were watching. He was singing along to the songs. I sort of turned around and was like, who are you? I didn't know you loved this. Oh, I used to watch this all the time as a kid. It has a special place in people's hearts.
The thing is, as you say, you know, you've been together for 5 years. It makes you wonder, what else is he keeping from you?
He's actually Adam Sandler.
But it could be worse. You could be sitting there and he could just sit there and not laugh once and be like, this doesn't appeal to me in any way. And you'd be like, I'm really living with you. Like, I always have this fear that my wife's going to turn around to me one day and say, I don't like... You know, The Office. Yeah. Well, that was discovered. That was years ago, mate. But like, I don't like The Office. I don't get Ricky Gervais. I don't understand The American Office. I hate Curb Your Enthusiasm. I would literally be like, how much is divorce? You know, how much are we looking? Is it a couple of hundred quid? Because how could I love someone that, it's a tough one. Mm. On the note of me getting divorced, do you want to wrap this up with a rating?
Yeah, let's score it, shall we?
Go on, Ben, you take this off.
It's 10 out of 10.
Perfect.
Wow.
Every day of the week.
Wow. Mark?
7, which is still bloody good because I said I didn't enjoy it that much this time.
The maths are going to be hard for this one.
Don't worry, we'll give it a 10. Gemma?
For me, it's a high 9. It's
10, 9, 7, 20. Give it a,
go give on, it, call a, it a 9.
9.
Yeah. For me, it's a 9. It's a great comedy. It is a classic. It is a film that I've not seen for a very long time until the rewatch. I'm bound to watch this in the next few weeks. So I think overall, Life of Brian gets a skip to the end. 9 out of 10.
So many high ratings on this episode.
We're doing all right. We're doing all right. So whose goes it next?
It's old Ben.
It is old Ben indeed. I'm getting old.
He's forgot it, look.
No, I haven't. I'm thinking of how to word it. In recent times, when we've been coming up with our picks, there's usually a reason for it. There'll be some sort of thematic reason. We want to do a controversial film. We want to do a classic. We want to do a shit film. I don't want to do any of that. I just want to do a film that's really good and that I don't think we've ever mentioned on the podcast. I don't remember us ever mentioning this film. We're going to rewatch L.A. Confidential.
Oh!
Wow!
Fuck yes! List and shout. That's the last time we're ever going to hear that tune, guys.
Stick
and
to your
it's the last
job.
Time you're ever going to hear me sing. As you just heard, it's the final ever round of List and Shout. Bit emotional, like the end of Wolverine a bit. You know, it's coming to an end. And, you know,
if there's some logs, I'll put
it into an L like that, you know. It's time to confess I'm not going to be the winner on this episode. I've come to terms with it, and it is really all down to either Ben or Gemma. Head to head. The final round, winner takes all. If you haven't listened before, I don't know where you've been, please go back and listen, but I'll give you a bit of a gist of the game. There's a pot with different subjects on, four in total, with a choice of 20 answers. The guys then have 90 seconds each to name as many of these as they can. If you heard last week, Ben got 17. I got zero.
You were... Ben savaged zero. You. Ben absolutely obliterated
I actually
you.
I got zero. But Ben got 17, which is going to be probably a record that will never, ever be broken in the history of the world, I don't think. That was unbelievable. You might do it now, you might not. Let's see.
I was about to be like all cocky and run my mouth, but then I realised we've not played this round yet, when I could look a right mug.
Yes. And in the very first round of this, Gemma beat me. And in the last round, Ben beat me. But now it's really down to these two. So I'm really looking forward to this because it's not going to be me. I can hand over the torch. It's going to be good. I haven't shafted you, I don't think. I know you probably thought I would have gone and put some really hard topics and tried to. But it wouldn't work, would it? Because if I put one that was like Kevin Smith films, if Gemma picked it, you know, massive fan, you'd probably know exactly what you're doing.
And thankfully, he's not made 20 films.
Yet. So to make it completely fair, fastest hand up first gets to pick it out for old Ben. Massive
there.
Oh,
to pick it out first?
Yes.
That's the worst thing I want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Shitty death.
So, Ben, what's the topic that Gemma is going to be selecting her 20 from? And by the way, I've handwritten them.
God, I think I'm going to be sick.
Gemma, you've got the best picture Oscar winners from 1996 to 2016.
Are you happy with that?
Okay.
Your 90 seconds starts now.
Moonlight. Spotlight.
Spotlight.
Titanic.
Nope. Titanic, yes.
Spotlight is a yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Spotlight one.
Got the sorry, you said Moonlight, which is 2017. See what I did there?
No, that's a Spotlight.
Come on, you've got 1 minute 20.
Right,
come on.
Wait, fucking hell.
You've got two.
Okay. A Beautiful Mind.
Yes.
LA Confidential.
Nope.
Crash.
Yes.
Oh, God.
1 minute to go.
Oh,
I can see it. Ben's got 20.
I know,
Ben's itching to say this right now. God, my mind's gone truly blank.
You've got four, so it's not bad.
Oh, well, it's not good though, is it? Oh, come on, brain, think.
Best Oscar picture winners in the last 20 years.
That's the topic. Can't think of any answers.
The clue's in the
40
name.
Seconds.
Oh my God. Am I going to mark this up?
That is not going to be an expression because I will see hashtags and that's not what I want to see.
Brutal. How many she got so far?
She's got four in 30 seconds.
That's not bad.
Oh, but it'd be better if it was on two hands.
Come on, you can do this.
Okay.
30 seconds, come on.
The best picture goes to...
Think all those people that have gone up and got those awards.
I know.
The best picture, the
Danish
big
one. Girl, Room. Fuck. No. The Departed. Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Yes.
You said no to Departed. That's a yes as well.
Yes.
Oh man.
Six.
Lincoln. God. Oh my God, that's so tense!
No, you did it. What did you get? Six?
One, two, three, four, five, six.
Okay.
That's
Ben,
all right.
Do you want to reel them all off for me?
So hold on, what did she get?
She got six. So she got A Beautiful Mind, Crash, Spotlight, Lord of the Rings, Titanic.
The Artist.
Yep.
No Country for Old Men.
Yep.
The King's Speech.
Yes.
I'm done showing off. I could get more, but I shouldn't have to.
12 Years a Slave, Argo, American Beauty, Birdman, Million Dollar Baby, Shakespeare in Love, Slumdog Millionaire, The English Patient, The Hurt Locker. You did all right.
Mm-hmm.
But I
didn't do great, though. Let's face it.
Yeah. If I get something like horrors, you'll do me. You're fine.
Right then, Gemma. So you got six. It's now Ben's turn. So do you want to pick the topic for
him? Sure.
This could be very interesting.
I'm going to go for this one.
If you can read my handwriting, you get an extra point.
I have to laugh. Oh, Empire top 20 horrors of all time.
Oh,
there we go. Ben, your 90 seconds starts now.
Halloween.
Yes.
Day of the Dead.
No.
Dawn of the Dead.
No.
Shaun of the Dead.
Yes. That's true.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
Blair Witch Project.
No.
The Thing.
Of course.
Oh, God, now I'm fucked. How many have I got so far?
At the moment, four. You have five.
That's better. That's better than I thought I'd do, to be fair.
Oh, no, four.
You've
got a minute left.
Oh,
I'm
God.
Secretly counting down here.
What films are horrific? Just... The Exorcist.
Yes.
Poltergeist.
Nope.
That pisses me off.
I'm angry about that as well.
I would have been really scared about that one.
Empire. You got 45 seconds left.
Oh, Christ on a bike.
People slashing each other.
Cabin in the Woods.
Yes.
Oh, great shout.
Great shout, mate.
Wolf Creek.
No.
Freddy versus Jason.
No.
Task.
No. 30 seconds.
Oh, God.
You're doing all right, man.
Little Shop of Horrors.
It's got the word horror in it.
He's got six here.
He has. I know. I'm keeping count down here.
Rocky Horror Show.
No. 10 seconds, mate.
Alien.
Yes.
Oh!
Booyakasha.
Any more? Oh, you got 6 seconds.
Great shout.
La La Land. It was horrific.
Minus a point. To be fair, that's backfired. He's done all right there.
He's done really well.
I'm happy with that. Was that seven?
Seven.
I'm happy with that. Didn't think I'd get that, to be fair.
I'll tell you what you've missed. American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
Carrie. Evil Dead 2. Jaws.
See, I think that's... But I don't know what that horror. Or that. That's not a fucking horror.
Nosferatu. Psycho, Rosemary's Baby, The Shining, Ring 2, Wicker Man, and Scream.
Ring 2!
I hope it's the Nicolas Cage Wicker Man.
Was there another one? Right then, at this midway point, it's 7-6 to Ben, even though we had horror.
I know.
Do you want to reveal the next topic for Gemma?
Ooh. Uh-oh. Your topic is the first 20 James Bond movies.
Ready, go.
Casino Royale?
No.
Live and Let Die? Moonraker?
Yes.
Thunderball? On Her Majesty's Secret Service?
Yes, yes.
Doctor No?
Yes, not no.
I'm getting bombed here.
You're on five.
Goldfinger?
Yes.
Goldfinger.
So you're on six here.
A View to a Kill?
Yes.
Oh. License to Kill.
Yes.
For Your Eyes Only. The Spy Who Loved Me.
Fucking hell.
This is really good. What do you say? Spy Who Loved Me, yes.
Yep, For Your Eyes Only.
Yes. You've got 43 seconds.
From Russia
seconds.
With Love.
Yes.
Shit. It's got to be on about 12 by now.
No, think of 70s ones, Jan. Come on, think of 70s one. I don't know, Skyfall.
No.
You're
on 11.
Oh my God.
That is very good.
You're doing a mark.
I just got to think of all the other ones now.
How long has she got left?
20 seconds. Ooh. You can do this, Gemma. Oh, come on, get the full 20.
I know.
1 second. You can do this.
I can't.
Every time you say I'm going to take one off.
Oh, God.
10 seconds.
Thinking of all the songs that have ever come out. The World Is Not Enough.
Yes.
Oh, fuck me.
Tomorrow Never Dies.
That wasn't in time, I'm afraid, and I'm being strict. Sure. Nope. If you listen back, unfortunately, sorry.
I'd have given it to you, to be honest, but, you know, Mark's stricter than me.
12.
Yikes. So that puts her on 18.
Holy hell.
So I need 11 to tie, 12 to win.
Octopussy!
What you could have had. Die Another Day. Diamonds Are Forever. Living Daylights. Man with the Golden Gun. Octopussy.
Ugh.
Tomorrow Never Dies, and You Only Live Twice.
Oh, is that the one that was out of time?
Yeah. And You Only Live Twice. When I made sure I did the first 20, because when you went straight away, you were like, you know, oh, Casino Royale. Nope.
Aww.
And the old one wasn't an official James Bond film, was it? The original Casino Royale.
No. So you learn as well as playing on this game.
Oh, that's the difference.
I pray this is another Oscars one. If it's not, I'm fucked. If it's an Oscars one, I might have a chance at a comeback.
I bet it is. I think it is.
If it's Best Directors, I might have a shot.
I think you got this.
I think he's only put one Oscars one in.
Do you think? Yeah. I don't know.
I think it's going to be Best Westerns or something, which I'd still be all right on, but not great.
So currently at the score now is 18, Gemma. Unbelievable. Against Ben 7. So 11 or more, this is going to be it. Do you want to pick the final topic?
Sure. God, my hands are shaking.
It really is make or break. If you want to just slowly read this out to Ben.
Blog critics, top 20 black and white movies.
You
3, 2, 1, go.
Pass.
Pass?
Yeah, pass.
You can have some. We've got 20 here.
Oh, God. The Third Man.
Yes.
Schindler's List.
Yes.
Citizen Kane.
Yes.
That is black and white.
I'm done. I'm exhausted.
You've got
Casablanca. Is that black and white?
Yeah.
It is, but it's not on here.
I would have said that.
Oh, Lord.
You got 3.
I won't get any more. Pass.
Any
I give up. Stop the timer.
Are you sure you want to quit?
Yeah, I quit.
There we have it. The final score. Ben on 10. Ben Gemma, 10. You are the new champion on 18. Do you want to know what you missed?
No. Move on.
Big Sleep.
No, I said.
Big Sleep. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which we talked about. Manhattan. My Darling Clementine. Night of the Hunter. Night of the Living Dead. Pandora's Box. Psycho. Raging Bull. That would have been a big one. Seventh Seal. Sunset Boulevard. Top Hat. Or To Kill a Mockingbird. So, Ben, you got three there. And I see it could have been picked either way, and I take responsibility that I did completely fuck you there quite badly. But if you listen back to the old episodes, there was one episode where you asked me to pick every extra in a Kevin Smith film. So,
but that's your specialist subject.
You love black and white films. You know, look at your, just looking around the room now, there's nothing black and white. So, Gemma, you are the new champion.
Yay.
Come on, celebrate. Yay. This is good. You have bragging rights for the next week until there's a brand new game show.
I know it's not going to last long, though. So this is what happens when you're full of self-doubt all the time. But I'll take it for the time being.
So as I just said, there's going to be a brand new game show on the next episode. And we have a tradition where we like to keep you juiced up and dangling. Is that the nice way of saying
it? Couldn't have put it better myself.
The juicy danglers, that's us.
I'm going to give away the name, and is it cool if I be the Games Master again next week?
Sure.
Yep. And, you know, I might go a bit more lenient, we'll see, but let's not get into the actual nitty-gritty of the game show. Let's just give you the name, okay? So the name for the brand new game show starting next week is High Five. Okay?
So said in that exact voice, always.
High Five.
You can't normally announce it in any other way. Stay tuned for that in 2 weeks' time. It's almost time to wrap up, but before we do, let's finish with some good old traditional listener questions. Starting off with, we've actually had three people come up this week and ask this. So Chris Duck, at FockerRN529, and the Chump Cast have all come up with, at this sad time of Bill Paxton's passing, what was one of your favourite performances either directed or acted in?
Aliens.
Yeah. Hudson. He's born to play that part in my eyes.
Game over, man. For me, I would say Chet in Weird Science. I love him in that.
It's good.
He's great.
And I also love Twister. People don't give that film credit, but it's really good. And I only watched... what's the film he directed? Is it Fraicality? Is that how you pronounce it?
Oh, Frailty.
Frailty. Yeah. There we go. I've got my mispronunciation done right at the end this episode. But enjoyed that film. I watched it when I read that he had passed away and I'd never realised he directed it. It was a good film. Thomas Hill has asked, back in your college or uni days, was there ever a TV show or a film that you pretended to enjoy just to kind of go along with everyone because you just had to, but really it was a big pile of wank? That's his exact words.
Probably the football.
You just went along and watched
football
it.
In general.
Got me in with the lads. But yeah.
I don't like it, but I've suddenly sometimes, it's not even back then, but Big Bang Theory, I just go along with it. When people are talking about it at work, oh yeah, that was funny. It's shite. I don't like it. I don't find it funny. It's not cool to watch, and I just don't like it. Sorry.
I don't think there's anything I've pretended to like. That's not really me.
No.
But I have sat with people when I was at uni and stuff while they were laughing their tits off at Family Guy, and I was just sat there stony-faced because I just don't find that show funny.
I think I watched some of that last night. I don't think there was even one point where I went,
it's lowest common denominator shite.
Charmaine has said, your movie is now based on your life. Instead of the actors, who would you have direct it?
Ooh.
I would pick, even though Nolan's my favourite film director, I'd actually have Cameron Crowe because I like the way his films look and he would have the best soundtrack ever. So Cameron Crowe for me, it'd be an honour for him to direct that interesting, amazing two-hour epic life story of Mark.
The life of Mark.
The mispronunciation coming soon. But yeah, that would be, Cameron Crowe would do, yeah, it's being safe hands.
Is it Nicholas Redfern Wunig? The
Nicholas Winding Refn.
Thank you. The guy who did Drive. I think it would look ultra stylized, we'd have a really cool soundtrack, and there'd be at least one massive violent outburst at some point, which would look pretty cool with like neon glow and everything. So yeah,
it might just be because we've mentioned him a couple of times today, but I'd like to see My Life Story directed by Terry Gilliam because it would just be weird as fuck.
Yeah, that's fair, right? At Dazza Bookseller, you're given a £100 million budget to finance any versus style movie ever. What clash would you make? I would want to see, and this is crazy, Rocky versus Bullwinkle. Imagine that. But it's actually Rocky played by Sylvester Stallone. That would be what I want to pay to see. Anything else out there, I'm not interested. And sci-fi don't need 100 million for any of these films. If you see the ones they advertise, you know, like Two-Headed Shark Attack versus Six-Legged Oyster Dog, these sort of films, they don't need 100 million.
Oyster Dog? How would that work?
If you're listening to this, you're not having that.
I'd say Kramer versus Godzilla.
Nice.
That classic divorce slash ruling the city kind of story. I think it could work.
Ben, what have you got?
So I'd like to see the character of Deckard from Blade Runner. And as we know, he likes to sort of hunt down replicants and robots and that sort of thing. I'd like to see him hunting down Chappie.
If you're listening, we will review it once you make it. This is a bit more for me and Gemma. Sounds of Fear, which is at Sounds of Fear Pod. Your favourite ever horror movie score?
Ooh. I do love a simplistic Halloween score.
That piano.
It's just two or three notes throughout, and it gives the same chilling effect every single time I watch it.
I'm with you. All the fog is really... Anything with John Carpenter, mm-hmm. he can nail.
Yeah.
Have you got any that remember?
Well, I'd go with The Thing, because as we said earlier, it's Ennio Morricone.
Yeah.
And he's the king.
It really is. There you go. At CaptainBeard93, after you guys have seen Logan... If it came about, who would you like to see play Wolverine in the future?
Good question. I'm instantly thinking Tom Hardy.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a burly little angry man, isn't he?
The beard's already in place. Mm-hmm. CM Punk. You know when he signed his sideburns? Yeah. He looked great. I don't know if you'd want to do that.
Maybe thinking about an origin story like when he's a teenager. Maybe somebody like Dane DeHaan. I quite like him at the moment. He did a few good films a few years ago. I'm not impressed with what he's currently got on his resume because I think he's doing one with Cara Delevingne and there's that weird cure for wellness that doesn't really float my boat at the moment.
He always looks like he's reading off cue cards for me.
Oh, maybe it's his lazy eye.
Yeah. Okay.
Also, he's asked, after you guys have seen the latest Wick film, he picked up on that we were seeing it, do you think that he deserves more praise now?
Keanu?
I mean, yeah, I think he does. I think. What do you think of that film, guys? We enjoyed it.
Loved it.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. Brilliant fun.
Bring on the third one.
I did see an interview not long ago, and he spoke like he was Bill from Bill and Ted. He's like, oh my God, and then we had to do this fight scene, and I was like, whoa, and they were like, hey. It's like, yeah.
Was he stoned?
Probably.
Yeah, he does deserve more praise. Yeah,
I think so.
I think we kind of touched on it last time round. He's not a terrible actor, he just has a limited range. So as long as people use him properly, he'll get good roles and he'll do well.
Cal_Louise_Brown. Have you guys ever made a movie, been in a movie, or been on TV?
Been on TV.
Have you really?
Yeah.
When?
This is about, I was 14 at the time, and I lived in Germany, and they had MTV over there. And I called up and requested a music video, and I requested Chemical Brothers' Setting Sun.
Oh, so Annie just said, like, Gemma Hurst in the corner.
It's not really being on TV, is it?
My voice projected through the TV. I'm sure I've been on TV at some point. I just can't think of it now.
I've been on a couple of times. When I was about 13... I was on a kids' CITV game show. And I'm not telling you the name because then you could Google it and find
footage.
So I'm not telling you what it is.
Drunk.
Last year, you could see me in the crowd at a taping of Stephen Colbert's talk show, The Late Show, when we were in New York.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Mark and I appeared on camera on the WWE show Total Divas, which hasn't been broadcast yet. We think our episode's going to be on in April, there or thereabouts.
That's amazing.
I have been on TV. I was on Points of View about 2 years ago.
No way.
Yeah, I did like a quick little review for Murder in Successville.
Oh, yeah. How odd.
Do you remember when Eric Cantona kicked a fan?
Yeah, the Crystal Palace fan.
Yeah,
were you that fan?
Yeah, no. The next day, my mum took me, and it was just planned before, for my birthday, to go on an Old Trafford tour. And when they're filming the news reporter outside saying, oh, Cantona's going to be banned, you can see me standing there looking at the camera. I'm only about 11 or something, and I'm picking my nose. And I'm in this blue and white striped Man U shirt at the time, just picking my nose. And when I watched it back, my parents, look, there's... Oh, it's horrendous. The worst moment ever. And I've never made a movie, apart from with an ex, but...
Oh, my goodness.
That's disgusting.
You got a copy.
We'll watch it in a minute. Natasha Davis, what would your character's killer one line be if you starred in a zombie apocalypse movie?
Uh-oh, SpaghettiO!
I would be a... I think I'd be a butcher, and I'd run after them going, you're going to be dead meat. That would be pretty cool. You like that?
All right. Yeah.
I'd just steal Michael Scott's line from The Office episode, Threat Level Midnight. Clean up on aisle 5.
If you're listening, make this film, we'll be stars. Graham McIntosh is a brand new listener and loving the show and said, does IMAX really make a better cinema experience?
Interesting one, this. Because we did experience Kong Skull Island in IMAX, didn't we?
We did.
And where were we sat?
We were sat sort of in the corner having to crane our necks, but I don't know that that film would have been any different in a non-IMAX. I don't know, it's kind of a treat, isn't it, IMAX? It's something you do when it's a really big blockbuster. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it makes a difference. It's just nice seeing it on a bigger screen, but I don't know that it actually makes any difference.
When we went to the press screening of Fast and Furious 7, just seeing it on that scale was amazing. But yeah, why would you go and watch something like Manchester by the Sea at the IMAX? You don't need to. I saw The Dark Knight at the IMAX. It does... It kind of gives you that effect like The Matrix Reloaded, like, wow, that was amazing, wow. And then you walk out and go, actually, it wasn't. It was just because it was so spectacle and wow, this is amazing.
Hey, as long as the story is good, then we have no complaints.
Susie Bennison, who would you choose as parents in a fantasy game of Choose Your Own Family?
We already know who our dad is.
Who's our mum then? So we've got Kurt Russell as the Skip to the End official father, if you're listening. Come on, you've got to pay some child debts.
It definitely wouldn't be Kevin's mum from the Home Alone films because she's a useless
parent. Rubbish, isn't she? Or Kevin's mum from We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Don't have kids called Kevin.
The mum off Easy A, their parents are really cool and hip. They're really sound. I like her as a mum. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You've got to think who would go well with Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Goldie Hawn. There you go.
Overboard Goldie Hawn. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This isn't a question, but Ryan Abbott picked up and said, have you guys ever had a drinking game to your own podcast? Every time one of you says flawless, have a drink, you will be absolutely smashed.
What about every time Gemma says as well? You'll have to get your stomach pumped.
Or I say incredible.
Masterpiece.
Oh God, yeah, you'd be dead if you did that.
At Etchels has put, what is the best piece of marketing you've ever seen used for a movie release?
Blair Witch Project.
Oh, found footage stuff.
I'm still completely floored by how they did that. It was one of the first marketing campaigns where it was all on the internet, where there was three people missing and they would release videos. They had a Find Heather, Find Joshua kind of posters. Still to this day, that's, 15, 16 years ago? Still impresses me every time.
Something recent that I absolutely loved was when they released Force Awakens in China. Star Wars has never caught on in China. It's never done big business. So they were trying to rectify that for Force Awakens. So what they did is they got the Great Wall of China and lined up stormtroopers all along it. Oh, so it was just this wall full of stormtroopers. Didn't help. The film still didn't do very well, but it looked amazing.
Andrew Woolworth has asked, is it better to read a book before seeing a movie or the movie before the book? This is made for you, Ben.
I kind of think it's better to see the film. More often than not, I will go and see a film and then find out afterwards it was from a book. If you go in having read the book first, if the book was made first, obviously, then you have unfair expectations. You want it to be a perfect representation of what you've already read. So it's kind of better to let the film be standalone first and then maybe come back to the original material later, for me, personally.
You have more of a critical eye, don't you? Because you go, this was missed out. They didn't do this. They've changed that.
I can't read. Gemma, what do you think?
I think you'd have more of an open mind if you watch the film first. You can read the book afterwards and find this whole new world that perhaps wasn't touched up on a film.
I find myself watching a really good film and then going and get the book. When we did the rewatch for Fear and Loathing, straight away the next day, Ben was telling me, I went on Amazon, got the book, and then started reading a lot more. So I prefer seeing a film and then seeing what the book's like. At Out of Time has said, really simple, Al Pacino or De Niro?
Oh my God.
It's De Niro for me.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because of Don Pacino.
Yeah.
It's true. You can't get back past that.
And Geely.
Oh, God. And on that subject, I'm really looking forward to the Netflix movie that's coming out. I think there's millions and millions of pounds have been spent getting all those guys back together.
Yeah, De Niro, Pacino and Pesci, directed by Scorsese and The Irishman. It's going to be amazing.
Dream team.
After we did our gangster special that was announced.
There we go.
Just saying. Typical.
Shitegeist Pod. What movie is not allowed to be remade, in your opinion? The one that is completely off limits.
I don't know that I have one. I think it's a hell of a lot, really.
You'd be angry at this.
Yeah, I mean, Mark's just pointing at my blade on a post.
For those listeners out there, you'd be angry at this. What's this?
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't want to see a remake of Blade Runner, no. But most of my favourite films, I'd say the same is true.
Jaws would I would go mental.
And the thing is, it wouldn't surprise me if it happened, because they'd be like, oh, who needs a big mechanical shark when we can just CGI it? And it'd be a crappy CGI fish now that no one believes in.
And they'd have, like, The Rock playing Brody.
I think I'd flip a lid if I saw The Shining being announced as a remake.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be cool.
Would that cause you to literally go absolutely mental?
I'd flip a table, yes.
Countdown Pod, good friends of ours, they just hit episode 100.
Oh, good, congrats, 100. Guys.
100.
Well done.
What other comic book movies now should get the R-rated treatment, in your opinion?
I'm not a comic book fan, so this is not my question, I'm afraid.
I don't know. I don't know that it's necessary to do it just because you can. I think most of the films within the comic book realm don't need gratuitous violence and swearing. All of the MCU films, for example, they have that nice family-friendly sheen as well as being good films. I don't know. I'd like to see like an R-rated Judge Dredd film. I think the last one might have been, actually, but I just want to see a sequel to that, and that should be blood and guts and glory.
Carl Urban wants to do it as well, doesn't he?
Know,
it's just everyone wants to do it apart from, I think, the Bunzer, the man who puts up the money. Yeah. I don't think there's no one doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Very final question from Gareth Brown. Do any of you guys own any amazing film memorabilia, or would there be something that you would love to own? I've got something that I've shown Ben at my house from the new Star Wars film, but I'm not allowed to talk about it because it was a bit of a... from Pinewood Studios. Remember when you came to my house and I showed you on the top floor? I think you might have been drunk after
probably.
Download.
Yeah.
So I didn't show you.
I don't remember.
Do you not really?
No, I don't know what
you're
talking about.
Well, I've got something that they've used in the new Star Wars film, which I was given, and I can't talk about it because the person that gave me would lose their job.
Oh dear.
So I'm glad I've told you on here. And I do own, Ben's going to rip me a new one from this. You know in Morats where Jason Lee's got the backwards green hat? I own that.
Well, the actual one.
Yeah, there's a charity auction on Viewersky when Kevin Smith was selling those props.
How much did you pay?
I don't remember.
Oh, dear.
I'm not going to reveal that to you.
Is it thousands?
No, it's like $80.
Oh, that's all right.
Don't worry.
Thank God for that.
And it's Ben's birthday soon, so I'm going to get it in the tusk. The actual tusk doll, so we can wear it in bed.
Isn't that tusk suit in the comic book shop you went to in New Jersey?
The secret stash, yeah.
You actually saw it. How big is it?
It's big enough for him to sleep in. Ben's never cold again at night. He gets in it, all the little meat around him, all the costume.
I'll never need to put my heating on again.
Stop bellowing like a walrus.
At least we're not going to own anything, really.
I mean, the closest thing is my Kong Skull Island pass to the premiere. That's
mine too.
What would you like to own?
A hoverboard would be cool.
Hoverboard.
Yeah, or failing that, if money's a bit of a problem, then the hamburger phone from Juno. I'm easy.
That's her birthday.
I want a legit lightsaber. Oh. One of the originals from 77.
So if you're listening.
Bloody hell. Keep your questions coming. We'll answer them all again in 2 weeks. We did get a lot of questions this week. I'm going to move some of those over to the next episode because we're just getting too many, but it's all good and we will get there eventually. The best way to reach us is on skiptothend.co.uk, and on there we've got our Twitter, our Facebook, our Instagram and our email, and we'll answer them all again in 2 weeks' time.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. What an eventful show it's been, and what an eventful fortnight it has been for us, eh?
Just a little bit.
I'm not just going to say this now, but I would like us to all have a little nap.
Yeah.
Because I'm exhausted. Yeah. Maybe not in the Tusk outfit together. But I just feel like this whole 2 weeks has just been a bit of a daydream. I feel like either we're going to wake up or we're just going to pass out.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to pass out.
I think we should stay up and watch the wrestling tonight, Ben.
Yeah,
have
we
a
do
really
it?
Late night with work tomorrow.
Big time.
Yeah, brilliant. Just completely fuck ourselves. Sorry about all the F's and Jeff's on this episode as well. It's because we're doing the Logan episode, which is R-rated. So
it's our tribute to Logan, isn't it?
Next episode, we're back to the family love.
Plenty of good stuff coming up on the next episode as well. Gemma, what are we going to review?
We're going to be reviewing Get Out, which I'm tremendously excited about, the new Jordan Peele film.
It is one of the rare films that has 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes the last time I looked.
But it's all about what we think.
Indeed it is. Screw them.
Yeah.
And it's a horror. We're going to get Ben in a horror.
Yeah.
Indeed we are. Mark, what is our topic?
It's going to be our top three films about survival. So that's a whole broad spectrum.
Should be good.
Take a lot of thought, that one. A lot of thought, a lot of research. I'm interested in that.
Nah, just Google and pick the first three that come up, mate. Don't bother.
All of our answers begin with A.
Alive.
Yes. Ah, spoilers.
That might actually be in my list.
Wow.
And The Rewatch is a film that I don't think we've ever mentioned it, not even in passing in 60-odd episodes. We're going to rewatch L.A. Confidential. which is one of those films I think people forget how great it is. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come up on lists often.
Or is it shit?
Or
find
is it
out.
Shit? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Keep them dangling.
You've got them on edge now, matey. Plenty of other stuff. We're going to be starting a brand new quiz. Mark, what's it called?
High five.
High five.
Stay tuned for that. And we'll be giving away all kinds of prizes and all that kind of business.
Well, we've got that new amount of prizes from our matey at Richer Sounds.
Yes, indeed. Yeah,
Howie's
yeah,
going to
yeah.
deliver the goods.
Oh, Howie's a good boy.
So he's a very good boy.
Please go on to @RicherSounds on Twitter and mm-hmm. you know, follow those guys. And the more of you that follow, the more prizes we're going to get. It's that simple. It's a simple equation. As well as other people you can follow, go and find Dark Bunny Tees. Go to darkbunnytees.com. Buy all their stuff because it's all fantastic, but also buy our t-shirt while you're at it. It's £10. What you got to lose?
£10, but you couldn't even get 3 bottles of Brothers for that. You, know I mean? You couldn't.
Yeah. Exactly, I know.
And if you know, you got 66 episodes for free, you got specials, you've never ever once had to pay a penny.
No.
Pay a tenner.
And you don't have to, of course. We're not one of those podcasts that says you've got to buy a t-shirt or else we can't afford to do it anymore. It's bullshit. We'll keep doing it for free forever. So don't worry about that. Just buy a t-shirt because they're cool, yeah?
Skip the end, we'll only give you a podcast for free if you buy a t-shirt next week. But yeah, £10, man. And my mum's bought one.
Nice.
She actually texted me today saying, I don't...
Oh, brilliant.
It's a bit weird, she'll never wear it, but I think she's like that. You know, you just got to like buy the photo at your university graduation to show your support. Like, oh, yeah.
Maybe she could frame it. How cool would that look?
That would look cool.
So a lot to look forward to, and we shall see you in 2 weeks. She's loved, she's in my head. She's loved, she's loved, she's loved, she might be dead.